want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to talk with author Bruce Levine about his book, Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. Should be an excellent, excellent discussion. Kind of, you know, what I've been saying for years, that the American worker, that the American citizen, the voter, suffers from some bizarre form of Stockholm syndrome. How do we break that? How do we move from that? We're angry about things and we're just going to sit and complain to we actually get up, stand up, and do something. Or like that, that evangelical, preacher on TV, don't just sit there, do something. Simple. Simple stuff. Also, Mark Strom, executive director of Penn Action, going to be talking about the radical right wing's attack on Medicare and Social Security and some of the town hall meetings that they have encountered. I guess it's their turn a little bit, but they've handled things a lot differently. In fact, you're not seeing the what happened over in Lebanon there where the guy got up in Spector's face and pointing his finger. No, they've distanced themselves. They take questions only on cards, and they stick to their little format. And when anyone gets out of hand, they chuck them. Also in the third hour, Cliff Pilewski, he's going to be here. He's a founding board member of the National Employment Law Association. Going to be talking about the Supreme Court ruling that just came down today. Another and really in a long line. In a long line of very pro-corporate Supreme Court decisions. Another one of these decisions where you go, I got to be honest, big business, you got what you paid for. These guys are on your side. The corporatists are there in place. And the folks we thought were going to call balls and strikes, the people that we thought believed in stare decisis, the idea that law has been decided, precedent, all of that, evidently not so. So this ruling today, again, one of these that kind of makes you go, where is this going to lead from this point forward? Another of the in the long line of 5-4, conservative versus the rational folks on the bench, the three women and Breyer, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Ginsburg, along with Breyer in the dissent, and the other five. Wow. Yeah, before I go on to this. You know, when you stop and you think about Obama and you go, I'm really frustrated with Obama, which I have been. And I'm one of those folks who have said, you know what? There's some things that I'm angry about. There's some things that really tick me off. The fact that he didn't go after and pass the Employee Free Choice Act. The fact that he's only paid lip service to labor during his presidency. That upsets me. But when I look at a decision like this one, and I know that Anthony Kennedy, you know, he's getting way up in years. He's probably going to either step down or he's going to pass on in the next several years. Not hoping or wishing or thinking, but it's reality. When I think about Obama and I'm angry, I go, you know what? I would rather have him, given his past and who he's put on the bench, than someone like George H.W. Bush or someone like the little shrub. Or, worse yet, a corporatist like Romney or Trump or any of those other insaniacs on the far right. Or, heaven forbid, someone like Michelle Bachmann. When I look at, when I stop and I think about it, I go, you know, there's a reason that you need to support Obama on this frame, because when that happens, when, because Kennedy's the lynch, he's the deciding vote. You know the four. You know Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas. They're always going to go with the big business. You know they're always on the extreme radical right. You know that. That's a given. They don't even have to show up. In fact, I'm of the mindset that we just don't even bother paying them and say, you know what, just go home, take a vacation, go write books, go do speeches, go to the Tea Party rallies, do what you've been doing. Just go home. Save us the money. We know where your vote's going to be. And we hang everything on Kennedy. Because Kennedy's the guy who makes the decisions. He's the one who tips the vote. And today he tipped the vote on this AT&T piece. That just, you know, you go, okay, you know, this is another example where consumers are getting screwed and on its face. You look at it and go, okay, well, these people went and they signed up a contract where they thought they were getting a free cell phone with their contract, signed on the bottom line. Yep, we're going to get this free cell phone. Then you go through and you look at it. How many people actually read those contracts that they throw in front of you that are 8-10 pages of really small, very difficult to read print? How many people read that? I mean, maybe we should. Maybe this is, you know, one of those wake-up call moments. Maybe you should. But in the bottom of it, there's a $30 tax for this cell phone. But I thought it was free. You're going to tax me $30 for something that was free? Well, they went and wanted to file a class action suit, but somewhere in the language, it said they had to go to arbitration. And that is there for one reason and one reason only. To slow down the process, to bog down the process, so that you never have the ability. I mean, stop and think about this for a minute. You got this $30 charge, and one person got screwed. Are you going to go get a lawyer for $30 and go back and fight AT&T for $30? Well, you're dumb if you do, because no lawyer is going to take it. You couldn't possibly afford to litigate that kind of a case. So they know if you go down this route, it's going to cost you far more than it's going to cost them. It's going to be so difficult for you to do that you're just not going to do it. And you know what? You're going to bend over. You're going to grab your ankles. You're going to grin and bear it. Because, hey, you can't fight City Hall. Isn't that what we all say? You can't fight them. So just be happy. Take it. Take it like a man. Well, that's what they're giving out. And, again, it's another one of these situations where the corporations with their big money and their Supreme Court, because this is their court, have won another decision. And you go down the line on these decisions, one after another. You go back, what was it, a couple years ago, the Rent-A-Center versus Jackson case, where it said, you know what, you know, yeah, maybe we discriminated against that guy, maybe we didn't, but we said we had to go to an arbitrator instead of going to court. So he can't sue us in court, he has to go to an arbitrator first. Basically taking your rights away. And they're saying, and when we talk with Cliff a little bit later, we're going to see how this can affect the workplace. Because what they're saying is these kind of clauses, if you put these into contracts, you might be able to put this into an employment contract saying that, you know what, you won't file a class action lawsuit against us for discrimination, for any number of things. Or maybe we go back to, you know, the good old days when we had yellow dog contracts where your employer said, you know what, the only way I'm going to give you this job, you sign that contract at the bottom saying you'll never join a union, and if you do, you're fired. Do we want to go back to those days? I mean, it is a contract between you and your employer. And I look at this Roberts Court and these decisions that have come down, and I'm no legal expert, but our friend from the National Employment Law Association, he is. We're going to talk about this later. But when I look at this, it takes me back to the Lochner era when they were pushing this liberty of contract, when my employee and I come up with a contract, whatever I want and he's willing to accept, that's the contract. If he's willing to work for a dollar an hour, that's the contract. If he's willing to let me sleep with his wife as a condition of employment, that's the contract. If he's willing to let me beat his children, that's the contract. And that's what liberty of contract is. It's this, hey, you made the decision. You two agreed. Even though you're not on equal footing. Because if you don't sign the contract, you don't get the job. And in this case, if you don't sign the contract, you don't get the service. Now, part of me thinks this could hurt AT&T, even though they are going to be the largest cell phone provider in the country, the largest wireless provider in the country very, very soon. Maybe it's going to hurt them by having smaller carriers come out and say, you know, we're not going to have those kind of contracts. Who knows? But at the end of this decision to me scares me a bit, because how much of this is going to take us back? How far are we going to go back to yesteryear, to the good old days where we didn't need minimum wage laws, we didn't need maximum hour laws? You made your own contract. And how often do we hear that same rhetoric now? Because we're still hearing it. Oh, I'll make my own deal. I don't need that union. Make my own deal. This is the business-friendly climate that they've brought us. And at the end of the day, this very, very corporate Supreme Court is taking the individual right away. And that's the right of association, the right of coming together. That's what these class action suits do. You and I are never going to be able to take on a multi-state, multinational corporation. It's never going to happen. Never going to happen. And for all the talk of how much we despise lawyers, in this society you need them to protect you against the AT&Ts, the big corporations. But this is taking us back to the good old days. And I ask you, is this where we want to go? Is this the kind of stuff that we want for our children in the future? I mean, again, you know, you got the Republicans, the business-friendly people, saying we should do away with child labor laws. We should do away with minimum wage laws. We should do away with those maximum hour laws. Do away with regulations. Too many regulations. That pesky minimum wage. Do away with all that because, you know, business and the employee and the employer, they should be able to decide. And get rid of those unions. Don't need those either. It's amazing stuff. Again, you know, I look at this and I don't know why more people are not outraged, are not taking to the streets. You look at Corbett's budget, you look at, you know, the things that are going on with Medicare and Social Security, and you look at all across this country, the attacks that are going on. Why aren't we up on our feet? Why are we in the streets? And when we come back, we're going to talk with Bruce Levine. He's the author of Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. We're right back after this.
Drowning in crafted lies. Save the USA and resume the times it might. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Mediation Board Tuesday announced the voting schedule for a union representation election for 24,000 flight attendants at United, Continental, and Continental Micronesia Airlines. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says flight attendants are ready to take control of their careers at the world's largest airline, formed from the merger of United and Continental. Ballots will be sent to the flight attendants on May 17th, and voting closes on June 29th. Vermont's Senate passed a universal health care bill Tuesday. The Grassroots Health Care as a Human Rights campaign cheered its passage and is calling for the strongest possible final version of the bill, which now must be reconciled with Vermont's House.
A May 1st rally at Vermont's Capitol will urge lawmakers to stand up to the corporate interests in health care industry, which will be trying to weaken the bill. The Health Care as a Human Right campaign says it will draw upon the human rights principles of universality, equity, accountability, transparency, and participation to push to strengthen the final version of the law. It's been 25 years since the disaster at Chernobyl. Jesse Russell reports.
Tuesday marked the 25th anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. On that date in 1986, reactor number 4 exploded, impacting the Ukraine and neighboring countries. A memorial service was held on Tuesday in Kiev to mark the occasion of the world's worst man-made nuclear accident. Nearly three decades later, workers are still needed to do upkeep on a container that was built around the plant to reduce radiation leakage. Ukraine continues to hope to raise more than $1.1 billion that would be used to build a massive dome over the plant and the surrounding land. The country is $300 million short. Until that money is raised, workers will continue to perform maintenance on the facility. 330,000 residents within the 77,000 square mile radius of the reactor were evacuated, leaving a nearly barren and unoccupied zone of empty buildings. Workers that took part in the cleanup, dubbed liquidators, are still fighting the state due to cuts that have reduced pensions, housing allowances, and medical care. Ukraine has been recovering from the worldwide recession, and the government has claimed it can't afford to keep the promises made two decades ago.
A grassroots group called U.S. Uncut NYC will teach corporate tax evaders a lesson this Saturday. The group says it will take over a private space at an undisclosed Manhattan location and use it as a classroom on the consequences of corporate tax evasion. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light.
Well, that's the key. Don't give up the fight. You know, I look at Friday, and Friday marks the 117th anniversary of Coxey's Army's march from Massillon, Ohio, to Washington, D.C. And why'd they do that? They did it because they were unemployed, and they wanted their government to do something, create jobs, help ease the pain of the Great Panic of 1893. So what you had is you had 500 people who came together. They said, you know what, we're gonna go. We're going to walk from Massillon, Ohio, all the way to Washington, D.C. And the question I have is, why are we seeing the 15 million unemployed in this country and the millions who have been long-term unemployed taking to the streets? Why are we not seeing more of what happened in Madison when we were out there, 150,000 people crowding their capital? Why not? So I've asked Bruce Levine, author of Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated and Battling the Corporate Elite, to come talk to us. Bruce, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to be on your show, Rick.
You know, I look at this and all of these attacks. I mean, states across the country with their budgets, slashing education, stealing collective bargaining rights. I have to be honest. I've looked at the American working class and I've said, I think that they suffer from mass Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is that a lot of folks who are academics or even authors and journalists, they tend to focus on this idea, well, the truth is going to set them free. So we just kind of keep telling folks about how they're getting screwed in a million different ways. And the problem is when you get a population that has been so beaten down, so dispirited, so demoralized, in many cases broken, that those kind of truths no longer set us free. And so a big reason why I wrote Get Up, Stand Up was to have folks understand that we have to restore guts, we have to restore balls, courage, kahunis, and we have to restore unity and solidarity. Because if we don't do that, not only the truths of our oppression are not going to set us free, but even knowledge of time-honored strategies, tactics, all that kind of stuff, people are not going to implement it. So there's things that oppressed people have always done to overcome the elite. They're out there. I talk about them in detail and Get Up, Stand Up. But people are not going to do it. I know they're not, unless we get them back their guts and their courage. And that's a big part of why I wrote the book.
Well, here's my problem with that. I believe that people act in their own interest. We're somehow in this radical self-interest. And all I've heard during this great Bush recession is, well, I'm lucky. I still have a job. I can't do anything right now. I'm just fortunate to have a job right now. I believe that things have to get so bad people have nothing left to lose, and that's the only way you're going to see the mass mobilization you saw after the Great Depression of the 30s, where people did things like in Flint had sit-down strikes, like here in Hershey had sit-down strikes, and people did begin to come together because, you know, as the old labor saying says, when your stomach's empty, maybe your head gets right.
Well, I've looked at that whole issue of just maybe we have to wait around for things to get bad enough here. And there's something of a little bit apocalyptic about it that's a little bit problematic in the sense of, well, it makes people passive. It says like, okay, we don't have to do anything. We just have to wait around for things to get, well, how much worse do you want it? I mean, we're getting completely screwed on every different dimension here. Yeah, I guess we only have 10%. Well, it probably is closer to in real terms, 18% unemployment. Do we need the Great Depression, 25, 30% unemployment? I mean, but when you take a look at history, actually, for most of the case for the non-elite, things have been incredibly crappy, and they haven't resisted. So the idea that you have to wait until things get bad enough, for most of American slavery, a few hundred years, there were rebellions and resistances, but for most of the time, and most places, there was no rebellion and there was no resistance. And in fact, the rebellions that did happen in the worst of times were with people who had somehow gotten back their self-respect and some confidence they could succeed. And so that becomes one of the themes of Get Up, Stand Up, from the populist movement to the Great Flint Sit-Down Strike to, in my childhood, all of those great Wildcat strikes that my family was part of. And what happened was that folks had developed some great self-respect. I call it individual self-respect, and they had some confidence that they could succeed. And one of the things that I take a look up in Get Up, Stand Up is how the different spokes on the wheel, how that's been destroyed. A lot of different ways. Some of these are, you would expect, just the classic corporate breaking the unions and what they've done. But in a lot of other areas, in my business, I'm in the psychology business, and I'm embarrassed to call myself a psychologist because increasingly my business is helping break the spirit of resistance in young people, and that's going on in schools and many other aspects of our society. So a big part of what we have to do is to stop this happening, and we can do it every day in every way, not just obey and comply to illegitimate authorities out there. And that's one of the ways that we get back our guts and get back our self-respect.
And that's right in line with what I've been saying for the longest time. I think the unemployed need to take camp in Washington and state capitals across the country. I've been telling kids here, college kids here in Pennsylvania, when school is out, when your finals are done, which could be your last semester, bring your sleeping bag and your toothbrush here to Harrisburg, camp out in the Capitol Rotunda like they did in Madison, to draw attention to do something to bring people back together.
Right. I mean, we have to, in every which way, that where you're confronting, and the reality is that demonstrations are nice, voting is nice, I'm not opposing any of these things, but the reality is, when you take a look at successful democratic movements, I mean, folks, movements where they stop the power powerful and elite from completely trampling on them, they weren't done risk-free. They weren't done without guts. I mean, you talk about the great Flint sit-down strike. I mean, as the elite have always done in American history, they use the army, the National Guard, in that case, the police, they own them, and they storm them. I mean, they attacked those guys who were sitting in the factory, in the sit-down strike, and those guys fought back, okay, and that's how they won. And so there's almost not any time that you can really take a look at in serious kind of power grabs where, poor people are trying to get some power back, or in the case of the United States today, we're trying to hold on to the little power that we got. I mean, we got guys in my state, Kasich, and in Wisconsin there, who are just kind of taking away the little power that we have. And when that kind of stuff happens, it's not going to be just enough to vote and have demonstrations. You're going to have to do some things that require some kind of risk, require some kind of guts, okay?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, and it's the kind of things that I've been talking about. When those kids bring their sleeping bags and camp out here until they throw you out or beat you with a stick and do some of the things that have happened in the past. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Bruce Levine, a practicing clinical psychologist, author, and speaker. His book, Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite. You can get that over at brucelevine.net. There's also a link at thericksmithshow.com to get his book. So where do we start in all of this? Walk me through some of this from the book. Where do we start here?
Well, we'll just take one area. I've got like 12 different areas that we're kind of getting broken in. But one of the things that most concerns me are with young people out there. And because traditionally, historically, you saw this in Egypt, but in American history as well, that's where you could count on people who were resisting because they didn't have their family responsibilities yet. And they felt like it was easier for them to take some chances. But we're breaking them in our schools and we're breaking them in my business. And so what we have to do is really take a look at how that's happening and do something about it. So just simple things like these, they're getting these No Child Left Behind and Obama's Race to the Top. Basically, these are standardized testing that meet the needs of the corporate state, not students. And what's happening is you're creating fear. And fear kills curiosity, critical thinking, challenging illegitimate authority, and fear kills resistance. And then you're scaring these young people out there that are going to be losers if they don't go to college. At the same time, you're saddling them with ridiculous debts if they do to go to college. And so part of what I try to talk about in Get Up Stand Up is that on every level of our life, we have to kind of resist these kinds of authorities that are breaking our spirit here. And we certainly have to resist those people in my business out there who are, you know, creating diagnosis. And I'm not joking here, Rick. We created diagnosis. Same year Ronald Reagan was elected president, we came up with this diagnosis called oppositional defiant disorder, OBD, which pathologizes kids who are just not complying with adults. I mean, that's the symptom of the diagnosis. And we're medicating them. My dumb business is medicating them with heavy-duty antipsychotic drugs. And so at every level here, I wish I could just say it was, you know, the right-wing conservatives here with their, you know, with their breaking their unions and with their, you know, their television propaganda and the corporate media, and all those things are true. And I go through all the ways the right-wing aspects of our society are breaking folks. But unfortunately, a lot of the progressive institutions like mental health, like schooling, have been taken over by the corporatists, and we've got to fight them too.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, and going back to what you were just saying, you know, the first thing that popped into my head when I was a kid, if you didn't listen to an adult, I went to Catholic school. There was a ruler usually involved. There weren't drugs. There was usually a ruler and a beating. So different times.
It's much more to tell, you know, it's much easier to overcome a ruler and a beating than to have your brain fried 24/7 with psychotropic drugs. And I see those kids today. That some of your future Saul Alinsky's, and I talk about what his childhood, Saul Alinsky, would for sure, the great organizer who wrote Rules for Radicals, he would have been diagnosed for sure with oppositional defiant disorder. Emma Goldman, you know, Cesar Chavez, Walter Ruther. You take a look at our great leaders, and we're losing a whole generation of young people who are essentially anti-authoritarians, people who, by nature, by spirit, question authority, do not comply with illegitimate authority, and those people are unbelievably valuable for any kind of revolution, and we're breaking them young. And, you know, that's not the only area, but there's a lot of different areas that the good thing is once you understand all these areas, you realize you don't have to wait for election day. You know, you don't have to wait every 4 years to kind of vote for the lesser of two evils. There's things that we could be doing every day to get back our courage, get back our balls, and a lot of that is the integrity that you get from resisting illegitimate authority and the solidarity you get from supporting other people who are resisting illegitimate authority in their life.
Excellent point. You know, I was just thinking of George Carlin, who I miss dearly. He was an absolute genius, but he said what the elite don't want are critical thinkers. They want people just smart enough to run their machines, but not smart enough to question why.
Right, and interesting, George Carlin never went to college, and there's a lot of really pretty fantastic, rebellious, anti-authoritarian people out there who are not schooled in college, and they were schooled on the streets. And part of the problem, too, is too many authors, journalists, activists, everybody has gotten this idea that, well, if you just keep getting enough information, certainly that's going to solve all the problems. And part of what they brainwash you in school, they never taught me this in all the school, that a huge part of the problem in life are these class battles, and they're won with guts and courage. They're not won by you knowing how you're being screwed. I mean, we know how we're being screwed. I mean, it's sort of insulting for a lot of folks who are in the intelligentsia, in liberal progressive media, to just come at people like they're stupid and they're ignorant, you know, that they're not resisting, they just don't know enough, and I'm going to tell you all the stuff we know. We all don't know everything. We don't know every spoke in the wheel. I know a couple of spokes a little bit better than others, but a bit better than other spokes, but we all know enough to know that we're getting screwed. Yep. So we need something else out there, and that's a huge part of what I talk about and get up, stand up, and talk about how they did it in the Flint, Michigan, how they did it in the populist revolt, how they did it in the Underground Railroad, how those wildcat strikes did, what did they do? What did they give people here besides scolding lectures about the fact that, you know, I'm upset with how ignorant and apathetic you are?
Yeah, and to that point, you look at the Tea Party that has sprung up. I don't agree with the direction that they ended up going, but initially I was right with them. I was angry about all things that we had told the 401ks were going to be our savior. If you worked hard and played by the rules, you'd get ahead. All of that stuff that they were angry about at the start before the big corporate money came in and co-opted the whole thing.
Exactly, and it's really Tea Party. I talk a lot about them in the get up stand-up because they're real interesting for me. Certainly there are a lot of folks out in the Tea Party who are racist and bigots and not worth much, but there are a lot of people in that, exactly like you're describing, and the progressive media sometimes makes fun of them, who are genuinely angry about getting screwed. And here's the thing, where they were exploited by demagogues. One of the points that I really want to kind of yell as loud as I can is when people are in pain out there, and people are unemployed, underemployed, saddled with student debt. I mean, people are really in pain out there, and demagogues know that. And that's what those Tea Parties, people like Sarah Palin and Dick Armey, they come along and they see these folks in pain, and they throw them something phony to reduce their pain. They throw them like a scapegoat, you know, like the undocumented workers, or now they try to split us up their new little technique of divide and conquer, private workers versus public workers, so they're going to try to make public workers a scapegoat, and something, little bone to kind of temporarily reduce their pain, and that's how they own them, and they bring them in a certain direction. And what smart activists who really care about democracy and really care about the workman do what folks like Walter Reuther and do what folks like they did in the populist movement was also understand these folks' pain and try to reduce it, but not to exploit it, to take them in a direction of having more control over their lives and more self-respect.
Excellent, excellent point. You know, you write in the book about the populist movement of the 1880s. You know, a time that I look at it, you know, when the robber barons were in control, the big railroad magnates, guys like Jay Gould, who said, I can easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. I see we're living through those exact moments. How can we learn from that and move forward? Your thought.
Yeah, one of the big edges that the populace had, that most of them, you know, was farmers, most of it was an agrarian revolt for the most part, and it was a lot of cotton farmers, but other farmers as well. One of the things they had going for them, they hadn't been broken in terms of schooling. I mean, a lot of those folks had no school, you know, no, very little grade school education, couple of grades maybe, but they didn't believe that they were inferior just because they didn't have a high school degree or a college degree, because they knew a lot of stuff. They knew they had a lot of skills. They were intelligent. They had competence in farming, they had economic skills, labor skills, they had a ton of talents, and so they didn't buy into the idea that they were inferior just because they had no money and they didn't have much education. So that was a huge thing that we have to restore. But what they did, populist organizers, real smart, was they realized, hey, our guys are getting ripped off here by the banks, and they're getting ripped off by the railroads, and that was the oligarchy of that time that was screwing them, the grain elevator operators. Why? Because they had to go into debt to plant their crops, and when they finally got around to getting their crops sold, they never could get enough money to pay off their debts, and so they were going deeper and deeper in debt and losing their farms and all that. So the great organization of that era was called, the short term for it was the Alliance. And what they did was they did some thinking about it. How could we come up with some kind of economic self-help here that we can pull off, that doesn't take a lot of money here, that could reduce these folks' pain economically? And what they did was they just came up with the first gigantic scale working people's cooperative, where they basically cut out the middleman. These farmers got together and they pulled their crop, cut out the middleman, got great prices for their crop, and word spread. They didn't need Twitter. They didn't need Facebook. Word spread in a hurry that this was a great deal, this Alliance. They just weren't an organization preaching at us. They were taking away our pain, giving us back our self-respect, giving us confidence, and this organization just grew it scared the bejeebus out of the oligarchy at that time. And they damn near came close to transforming the American into a real democracy. And I talk about all the details and get up stand up about how that oligarchy made a counterattack and the great lessons, positive lessons to be learned of what they did and some of the negative lessons. But one of the negative lessons is that in folklore, they call the Alliance a great movement that shot themselves in the foot because they went into politics. And so that's part of one of the things I talk about in Get Up Stand Up is that I'm not dismissing electoral politics, but people have to understand that this is an arena. This is a democracy battlefield that the rich in America, the way it's set up, have such a huge advantage. It's so easy to buy off that I'm not saying to completely blow it off, but you got to move into other democracy battlefields like the populists did, where you have a better shot of whipping these guys and getting back your self-respect and getting back confidence.
Excellent point. I think a lot of people thought everything was going to be okay once we elected Obama and the Democrats. Really hasn't turned out that well. The book Get Up, Stand Up, Uniting Populists, Energizing the Defeated, and Battling the Corporate Elite at brucelevine.net. You can also get there from our site at thericksmithshow.com. Bruce, great conversation. I appreciate your time. Would love to have you back again real soon.
Sounds good. It's fun talking with you, Rick.
All right, Bruce. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
To the Rick Smith Show.
They came, they saw, they conquered. This line pretty well sums up a little reported but important story about the new Tea Partiers in the U.S. House of Representatives. No sooner had they arrived than the corporate lobbying corps came to visit, saw what these supposed rebels were made of, and quickly conquered them without a fight. The forces of big business needed only to lay out some campaign cash, and quicker than you can say business as usual, the budding lawmaker snatched up the money and immediately began carrying the lobbyist corporate agenda. Check out the Financial Service Subcommittee, which handles legislation affecting Wall Street bankers. 5 Tea Partiers got coveted slots on this panel, and all 5 were suddenly showered with big donations from such financial lobbying interests as Goldman Sachs. Now, all 5 are sponsoring bills to undo parts of the recent reforms to rein in Wall Street excesses. Steve Strivers of Ohio, for example, hauled in nearly $100,000 in just his first 2 months in office, 85% of it from the special interests his committee oversees. He insists that the cash he took from Goldman Sachs and others has nothing to do with his subsequent support of bills that Goldman is lobbying so strongly for. Stivers claims that his sole legislative focus is on jobs for Ohio's 15th district. Really? Among the Deform the Reform bills that Steve is carrying is one to let Wall Street giants avoid disclosing the difference in what the CEO is paid and what average employees make. Another would exempt billionaire private equity hucksters from regulation. I can see that these bills are great job extenders for the barons of Wall Street, but how do they create a single job in his district? This is Jim Hightower saying, this stuff does nothing but shelter the greed-head banksters who wrecked our economy. Is that what the Tea Party Rebellion was all about?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. And now the Borowitz Report, andyborowitz.com. In a stunning announcement that took even political insiders by surprise, President Barack Obama revealed today that he ran for president of Kenya in 2005, but was disqualified when a birth certificate surfaced showing he was born in the United States. At a press conference at the White House, Mr. Obama spoke for the first time about his little-known, unsuccessful foray into Kenyan politics. He said, like every American boy or girl, I grew up with the dream of someday being president of Kenya. But soon after he entered the race, political opponents began spreading nasty rumors that he was not a real Kenyan, the president said, and foiled his bid by disseminating copies of his authentic American birth certificate. The president said, I guess I didn't look into the rules closely enough before I ran. I got caught up in the excitement of being president of Kenya, and I guess I just got carried away. Lizambi Angango, a Nairobi talk show host, who spearheaded the effort to unearth Mr. Obama's U.S. birth certificate, confirmed Obama's version of the events today as well. Mr. Oganga said, I felt strongly that the people of Kenya deserved the truth. We were not about to elect a president of Kenya who was really a secret Hawaiian. Elsewhere, Donald Trump found himself under renewed pressure to produce all of his authentic marriage certificates, believed to be numbered in the thousands. And the guy in all this you got to feel sorry for, Jake, is the Donald, who was up in New Hampshire today doing the whole stump thing, saying, mm-hmm. Oh, I'm proud of myself. I've accomplished something. So he's, you know, he's pretty happy that he confirmed what was already confirmed. So now my question is where are the tax returns? Where are the show me the tax returns? Because didn't he say not too long ago, I'll show my tax returns? I want to see the bankruptcy stuff. I want to see it.
He did say that, and I guarantee you if he becomes a legitimate candidate, the other candidates are going to bug him about that. He's going to be forced to at some point. Guaranteed.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, you know, the reality is that, why would you buy? If I were him, I would never have released that. Just because the people who believe that everything that's been online since, you know, 2008 is a fake, will believe that this is a fake. What's that saying that Bush used to say? You can fool some of the people some of the time, and all of the people some of the time. Yeah, but you know these hand or it was some of the people all the time or something. However, I don't know how to say it. Said somehow. Yeah, but I mean, you know, the people who believe that he's a true Kenyan, those people are never going to believe, no matter what. You could have live video footage of the actual birth, and they would say that, you know, somehow the CIA doctored that.
They had one of the leaders of the Tea Party and said, well, it looks legitimate, but you know, anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible. And that has been their mantra for at least 2 years. Yes, we understand that there's a form there, but we're not so sure.
Those Republicans.
We're not so sure there's not a conspiracy here.
Those Republicans in Hawaii, they're not real Republicans. In fact, when they dreamt this whole conspiracy up, when back in, you know, whenever back when Obama was born and the Kenyans and all the CIA people were together going, how can, and the KGB and all those people were together deciding how they were going to make this half white, half black child president someday, because they had such vision and such foresight to know that it was possible back in the 60s when they had white and black drinking fountains, that somehow a half black man was going to become president at some point, and this was going to be the golden child. This was the child.
Well, Rick, it is possible that those Republicans were aliens.
Oh,
this is a deep conspiracy.
There you go. You know,
anything's possible, according to the Tea Party.
If they had that kind of vision and foresight, they could have then gone back and they could have shaped all of the minds of all the Republicans who are in control of the Hawaii state house there, because the governor's a Republican. I forget what her name is. But they went back to her birth, and they knew the day she was born she would be governor, this woman in Hawaii, who would then be the one to put out the birth certificate. I mean, when you start breaking this down, it does seem kind of silly. But you know what? I guess we just don't think to the next level. We go, he was born in Kenya.
Well, at the end of the day, let's be honest here. Let's call a spade here. It's at the end of the day, it's a deep-seated hatred. It's a deep-seated idea that I cannot accept him as my president. At the end of the day, that's what it is. It's loathing, it's hate, it's all the negative human emotions. Do you agree with that, Rick?
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Changing America for the better.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
I've worked for the state now, helping kids with disabilities. I love the work, make the rules for bosses you would believe. We had layoffs again this morning. I got my children now that I can see. Parents are angry, how can I blame them? They end up blaming me. I become a problem. How did folk become all mine? The governor says they're tightening their belt. The only one that's tightening is mine.
Boy, that isn't the truth. You know, the governor says we're tightening our belt, but the only belts that seem to be tightened are the working people, are ours. We're the ones who sacrifice. I'm not seeing that shared thing going on. Ain't happening. I'm not seeing the shared sacrifice that they keep talking about. All I see is $1 billion from K through 12 education. All I see is 56% of the state higher education budget being slashed. And I see handouts to corporations. I see huge tax breaks. I see a Marcellus Shale that we evidently don't think needs to be regulated at all. Amazing stuff. Anyway, tomorrow, here in Harrisburg and across the country, is Workers Memorial Day, where we take a look back at and remember those who've lost their lives and who have been injured on the job. Here in Harrisburg, there's a breakfast at 8 a.m. Over at the Comfort Inn. There's at 8 o'clock. At 9:30, there's going to be memorial service at Laborers Grove over by the river there off of Front Street. And then at 11 o'clock here in the Capitol Rotunda, you're going to have a rally to get people out to, talk about safety, talk about, what's going on. So there's something to do. We hope you come out tomorrow and, participate in that. If you want to get more information, you can email CLC@Verizon.net. They got to do something about that. I guess it's just HarrisburgCLC.Verizon.net, HBGCLC. And again, tomorrow at 11, the rally at the Capitol. We will be there speaking. Hopefully folks will come out and say hello. Today, the AFL-CIO released their death on the job, the toll of neglect. It is their 20th consecutive report on the state of health and safety in the country. And, you know, you look at this year. Just recently, we remembered the 100th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire, where 146 women, young girls, young women, mostly immigrants, were killed because, well, the owners chained the doors shut because, you know, they got to protect those scraps. Got to protect the scraps. So 146 people burnt up or fell to their death from the eighth floor. And as we remember that, we understand why there's a need for workplace safety. This year also marks the 40th anniversary of the Occupational Safety Health and Health Administration, OSHA. And really this idea that we have a right to a safe workplace. You know, I've got a sign here by my desk saying, why is the right to die the only right on the job we're freely granted? And you look at the numbers that have come out, and we've seen, you know, 4,340 workers killed in 2009. That's 12 every single day. Now, look, things have gotten better. We're not seeing tens of thousands to 100,000 people dying. But we're still seeing folks on the job being killed. We're not seeing mine accidents killing hundreds. The Massey Energy Upper Big Branch mine killed 29, though, being the worst in the 40 years since OSHA was started. Think about that. We're going backwards. We also had, you know, a number of other explosions. Explosion at the clean energy plant in Connecticut killed 6 workers. An explosion in a Washington State refinery killed 7 workers. And let's not forget the BP Transocean thing, the oil rig that killed 11 workers. So now, in 2009, 4,340 men and women in this country died on the job, 12 every day. And they estimate that somewhere around 50,000 die from occupational diseases. In 2009, more than 4.1 million work-related injuries were reported, which I got to be honest, I think everybody understands is extremely low. Realistic estimates put it somewhere probably at 3 times that number. So you're probably pushing 12 million people injured in a year. Now, the death numbers, you can't fake those. Death in the course of working, you really, really hard to cover up. I mean, an explosion, something falls off the thing, knock it, kills you, you get hit by a forklift, those things, not easy to cover up, and they shouldn't be. These aren't things we should be covering up, and I'm not advocating for that, but, you know, these injuries, these 50,000 occupational illness deaths a year, I think it's low. And I think, really, honestly and truthfully, the workers' comp horror story that I read recently kind of talks about these 50,000 occupational illnesses. Because this guy, who got a job, he got a job at one of those HVAC places. And, you know, he doesn't know anything from Adam. He got the job because he needed one. Paid like $9-$10 an hour. His job was to take this chemical, spray it all over the coils, and spray it off, you know, just kind of clean things up a little bit. He was the after cleanup guy. Turns out the chemical was a dangerous, toxic chemical where you needed specific protective equipment, respirators, certain gloves, certain aprons, coverings that make sure you don't get it on you. You know what he got? He got a paper mask. Got a dust mask. Don't worry, the boss said, just don't eat it, is what they told him. Well, he died a couple years later. He wasn't classified a job illness. So how many of those do we see? How much of that when we go to work and we're exposed to things? How often does that happen? I think back to 9/11, Jake. I think back often. When those guys were cleaning up that pile, mm-hmm. and Christy Todd Whitman said, the air quality is okay. And everybody pulled those respirators off, and now we're seeing thousands of those people. those heroes, those people that we called heroes, suffering and dying from respiratory diseases. Why? Because you didn't have honest oversight. You didn't have honest regulation.
I can remember where I worked, and I probably told this story before. We started using something to clean the floors, and we used to call it Agent Orange. And when you put water in that, you could actually feel the heat. And initially, they didn't give us anything. They didn't give us anything. Well, we find out later from the Food and Drug Administration, it's a dangerous, toxic chemical. And I can tell you there was a large number of people who died within 20 years of cancer. Now, can you prove that it's all related to chemicals at the workplace? No, but when you have one after the other, after the other, after the other, who were in the exact same situation, you start to accumulate some strong evidence that, in fact, it did.
You know, I think back to a guy, you know, I was working in a freight company, working on the dock, and they had a spill of this blue dye. It was a powdery dye that was just all over the place. And this guy took 70% it was basically Clorox. Your bottle of Clorox has 5% of sodium hypochloride, I think it's called. This stuff had 70% sodium hypochloride. So the stuff you use at home, 5%. This stuff, the industrial stuff, 70%. And it said, take this stuff, dump it in with 4 gallons of water, because you got to dilute it. He's out there with the jug itself, dumping it directly on the ground. We had people passing out. And he was supposed to be the safety guy. So to me, you got to have regulations. You got to have oversight. And the problem is, in this country, we don't have enough inspectors. We don't have enough regulators. In fact, OSHA, according to this report, has 2,218 inspectors, both state and federal. That's what they have. 925 federal, almost 1,300 state inspectors. And what they're supposed to do, what these just over 2,200 men and women are supposed to do, inspect more than 8 million workplaces. So a federal inspector, just to go to every workplace once, would only take him 129 years. And the state inspector, not much better. Only 67 years. We have one inspector for every 58,000 workers in this country. I mean, stop and think about what the chances are of a company being inspected. And even when they are inspected and they're found guilty, the fines are pathetic. We don't see them shutting things down. The Upper Big Branch mine, they should have shut that down. But those guys didn't have the power. And the other part that bothers me is there is virtually no criminal liability. Don Blankenship is still walking this earth a free man after 29 miners were killed in his mine. After memos were released saying, you know, if your boss, your foreman tells you to do anything but run coal, you ignore him. Don't worry about putting up those safety brackets. Don't worry about ventilation. You run coal, because running coal pays the bills. So I guess the message that I should get from this is, if I want to kill somebody, if I want to kill somebody, if I really, really, Jake, if I just hate you and I want to kill you, all I should do is hire you, make you my employee.
Well, you made mention, and I heard you mention that before, the letter that he sent out that, you know, run cold. Don't worry about these other side things, some of which was addressing the issues of safety. And by the way, within 12 months of the accident, they were cited 8 times for not adequately recalibrating the methane, thank you. The methane gas, they had gauges, but they had to be recalibrated every 30 days. They were caught twice, not doing it for 3 months at a time, which means for a 2-month period, those miners either had no ability to determine methane gas, or it was very much limited.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Of the working class majority. Rick Smith. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Mediation Board Tuesday announced the voting schedule for a union representation election for 24,000 flight attendants at United, Continental, and Continental Micronesia Airlines. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says flight attendants are ready to take control of their careers at the world's largest airline, formed from the merger of United and Continental. Ballots will be sent to the flight attendants on May 17th, and voting closes on June 29th. Vermont's Senate passed a universal health care bill Tuesday. The Grassroots Healthcare as a Human Rights campaign cheered its passage and is calling for the strongest possible final version of the bill, which now must be reconciled with Vermont's House. A May 1st rally at Vermont's Capitol will urge lawmakers to stand up to the corporate interests in healthcare industry, which will be trying to weaken the bill. The Healthcare as a Human Right campaign says it will draw upon the human rights principles of universality, equity, accountability, transparency, and participation to push to strengthen the final version of the law. It's been 25 years since the disaster at Chernobyl. Jesse Russell reports.
Tuesday marked the 25th anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. On that date in 1986, reactor number 4 exploded, impacting the Ukraine and neighboring countries. A memorial service was held on Tuesday in Kiev to mark the occasion of the world's worst man-made nuclear accident. Nearly three decades later, workers are still needed to do upkeep on a container that was built around the plant to reduce radiation leakage. Ukraine continues to hope to raise more than $1.1 billion that would be used to build a massive dome over the plant and the surrounding land. The country is $300 million short. Until that money is raised, workers will continue to perform maintenance on the facility. 330,000 residents within 77,000 square mile radius of the reactor were evacuated, leaving a nearly barren and unoccupied zone of empty buildings. Workers that took part in the cleanup, dubbed liquidators, are still fighting the state due to cuts that have reduced pensions, housing allowances, and medical care. Ukraine has been recovering from the worldwide recession, and the government has claimed it can't afford to keep the promises made two decades ago.
A grassroots group called U.S. Uncut NYC will teach corporate tax evaders a lesson this Saturday. The group says it will take over a private space at an undisclosed Manhattan location and use it as a classroom on the consequences of corporate tax evasion. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals. And by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to the program. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Well, the GOP hit squad back on the prowl. Our international terrorist group, the Chamber of Commerce, not happy. Not happy that all the money that they spent getting a business-friendly Supreme Court might be undermined by the president who says he wants all contractors doing business with the federal government to disclose their political contributions. He's actually considering signing an executive order to that effect, saying, look, you know, I think the American people, if you're doing business with the federal government, the American people need to know what you're doing with their money. And I got to be honest, it sounds reasonable to me. I hope he signs the executive order, because look, you know, you look at these big corporations who are the Chamber of Commerce, as we think of it sometimes. You know, it's not the local people who are planting flowers or worrying about how they, you know, organize little local events. That's not the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is a massive lobbying group. You want to talk about a hit squad? That's what they are. They spend massive amounts of money influencing the political discourse in this country, and not for you or me. For the big multinational corporations.
And I gotta wonder how much multinational money is gonna go into, what they're talking about. In fact, the lobbyist for them, his name's R. Bruce Justin. He told the New York Times, we will fight it. We'll fight it through all means. To quote what they say every day on Libya, all options are on the table. All options. R. Bruce, which I can't understand why the whole R. Bruce thing, but R. buddy, all options? Because I can think of some that maybe not on the table. Should be interesting to note that a lot of the money that they took in, multinationals. In fact, most of their money comes from these big corporations. So who's going to be happy in all this? The folks over at K Street. They're going to be thrilled. Just as they're thrilled right now over this so-called corporate tax reform that they keep trying to ram down our throats. The Hill reported yesterday that a review of lobbying disclosure records shows that more than 80 companies, lobby firms, and trade groups have lobbied on plans that could lower corporate tax rates at the expense of loopholes and subsidies that are beneficial to many businesses and industry sectors. Those companies, not little mom and pop on the corner, they're the Caterpillars, they're the Exxon Mobils, they're the Intels, the biggest names in business. And the reality is, look, you know, K Street's going to get what they want. They're going to be able to figure out how to turn this in their way. A guy named Scott Hodges, he's the president of the Tax Foundation, he noted that lobbying on tax policy is routine, but he added that with billions of dollars a year in tax expenditures on books, it's not surprising that companies would want to try and make sure that their little slice of this, their little favorite break, don't lose out. What about us? What about you and me, Jake? What about we, the people? We don't have any lobbyists. What I think we're looking at 1986 all over again. We're looking at that tax reform bill, again, that screwed us, you and me, but eventually helped corporate America. They're going to lower that top marginal rate. Understand, we're going to lower the corporate tax rate from 35 down to 25. That's a done deal. Bet on that. If you need to go to Vegas, you need to go to Atlantic City and bet on it, that is a sure winner. And when the big lobbying money really begins to roll in and get the going, just after they did in 86, same kind of thing, because they're going to get their people's tax breaks back, of course, at our cost. And, you know, you look at this, Jake, and again, to me, it's just reliving history. The same failed policy that happened then, going to happen now. They closed some of the loopholes on corporations. They did in 86. They closed a lot of them on us. Well, I mean, to me, the biggest slap in the face is when they began taxing unemployment benefits. But they also closed the ability of working people like you and I, folks who might be in debt, to deducting the bank interest that we pay. You used to be able, on your credit cards every year you pay, I don't know how much you pay on yours, I don't pay any, but some people pay a lot of money in interest. You used to be able to deduct that. Not since 86.
No more. That's huge for a lot of people.
Absolutely. I mean, car loans, whatever.
We have a negative savings rate. Now, where do you think the people get the money to pay their bills?
And Chuck Loveless, legislative director at AFSCME, he said it's a false trade-off to lower corporate tax rates by reducing tax expenditures. And again, this whole argument to me, all of it is a false trade-off. We've lost this, Jake. It's a lost deal. We're going to lose this budget fight. We're going to lose this in a bad way because it's already been framed. It's been framed that times are tough. We got a spending problem. Right there, you lost. Because the reality is, man, we got a revenue problem. We got these big corporations who pay no taxes. Look here in Pennsylvania. 70% pay nothing, but we have the highest rate in the world. Oh, my God, have the highest rate. Nobody pays it. Is that the highest rate?
No, absolutely not. So you believe, Rick, that the Obama administration will capitulate?
I think it's a done deal. Because you got Democrats and Republicans in favor of lowering it. Because here's the argument. Here's the argument. They're saying, just like we're saying in Pennsylvania, the United States is no different. They're saying that we have this high rate, but three-quarters of the people don't pay it. So if we lower it, that and close some of the loopholes, and we'll encourage them not to avoid it because it'll be beneficial for them just to pay it. It'll be cheaper. And I keep saying, again,
1% taxation to these people is too much. They will avoid paying that at all costs. This is a false choice. This is a screw job for the American worker, for the American taxpayer. This is a massive screw job. And Democrats are in it as well. This is going to go through, I think. Now, yeah, there are going to be some tax loophole. They're going to be shut down. We'll probably shut down the money going over to push companies overseas. They won't be able to do that anymore. But at the end of the day, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, the lobbyists will be back in there saying, hey, can you tuck this in there? Get my guy a little exemption, just like we did in 86.
Is this perhaps, and I know the Obama administration has wanted it, we keep talking about the trillions of dollars that corporate America has that they're not spending. Is this perhaps a quid pro quo with the White House and saying to them, hey, you know, we'll lower your tax rate and you give us a promise you're going to start spending and you're going to help us stimulate this economy and get this economy back on its feet?
Well, if there is an agreement, shame on Obama. Because, you know, if someone's kidnapped me and they say, well, if you just do this, I won't kill you. And I do it and they kill me anyway. Because they're going to kill him anyway. They want their guy. He's not their guy. Eventually they're going to kill him. And I'm not meaning literally. The day Republicans won the election in November, what was the first thing that Mitch McConnell said? We're going to make him a one-term president. And that is their goal. And at the end of this, that's what it's about. He can make any deal he wants with them. They still want him out. Remember back in 2007? When Halliburton decided that, you know what? We don't want to be an American company anymore. We're going to move our headquarters from Houston, Texas, to Dubai. Why? Because we want to avoid taxes. Well, last night we talked about their first quarter revenue, $5.3 billion. And, you know, the right's been saying, well, we haven't been drilling, but Halliburton's been making a whole bunch of drilling money here in the U.S. That's their North American performance. $5.3 billion. Billion with a B. And yet they moved where? Dubai. And it turns out that Halliburton, again, another one of those good American companies, who has 13 subsidiaries in the Cayman Islands. They've got one in Panama. They've got all these tax havens all over the globe. Why? So they can avoid paying taxes. Now, maybe you're going to close some of that down. Maybe they will for a very short period of time. And I'm telling you, I think this is a major mistake, but I think it's going to happen anyway. So GE's back in the news. This F-136 jet engine that Obama wants to cancel, and a lot of the senior military people want canceled. GE has kind of hinting that they're going to fight. They're going to cause a fight with the Pentagon. And I stop and I think about this and I go, how far have we allowed these big corporations to get out of hand when they think they can turn around and say, you know what? We're not going to let you cancel this. We're powerful enough. We're powerful enough not to let you cancel this.
Tail wagging the dog. However, they probably have some powerful congressional allies, depending on where some of these defense contractors, how many jobs are in some of these influential congressmen's districts. I mean, I've never met a congressman that doesn't want as many jobs as he can get for his district. So it'll be interesting to see if that has any legs. It might have more legs than you might think. I hope not.
A spokesman for GE said that GE and Rolls-Royce will continue to work on the jet program, and with support from Congress, will continue to pursue the project for inclusion in 2012. So they're going full head. They're going to push and push and push, even though the military said we don't need it. The president says you don't need it. We should cut it. Instead of cutting education, instead of cutting health care, instead of cutting all those things, you know, maybe this one engine that they say we don't need, maybe this would be a good place to cut. But GE says, nope, don't think so. We're going to fight it. And when did Rolls-Royce begin making fighter engines?
Oh, my. We used them back in,
With General Electric in the United States.
Oh. Well, I know we used Rolls-Royce engines back in World War II for our fighters. That's going back a bit.
Well, but when did we start using them? You know, again, I go back to that Berry Amendment where all should be made here by American companies. Maybe I'm just an economic nationalist at heart. Maybe I am.
Nothing wrong with that.
But at the end of the day, if you're going to be a war society and you're going to bomb people, maybe we should make our own bombs. Just a thought.
Just a thought.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? Back after this.
Back to America. Rick Smith.
They came, they saw, they conquered. This line pretty well sums the little reported but important story about the new Tea Partiers in the U.S. House of Representatives. No sooner had they arrived than the corporate lobbying corps came to visit, saw what these supposed rebels were made of, and quickly conquered them without a fight. The forces of big business needed only to lay out some campaign cash, and quicker than you can say business as usual, the budding lawmakers snatched up the money and immediately began carrying the lobbyist corporate agenda. Check out the Financial Service Subcommittee, which handles legislation affecting Wall Street bankers. Five Tea Partiers got coveted slots on this panel, and all five were suddenly showered with big donations from such financial lobbying interests as Goldman Sachs. Now, all five are sponsoring bills to undo parts of the recent reforms to rein in Wall Street excesses. Steve Stivers of Ohio, for example, hauled in nearly $100,000 in just his first 2 months in office, 85% of it from the special interests his committee oversees. He insists that the cash he took from Goldman Sachs and others has nothing to do with his subsequent support of bills that Goldman is lobbying so strongly for. Stivers claims that his sole legislative focus is on jobs for Ohio's 15th district. Really? Among the Deform the Reform bills that Steve is carrying is one to let Wall Street giants avoid disclosing the difference in what the CEO is paid and what average employees make. Another would exempt billionaire private equity hucksters from regulation. I can see that these bills are great job extenders for the barons of Wall Street, but how do they create a single job in his district? This is Jim Hightower saying, this stuff does nothing but shelter the greed-headed banksters who wrecked our economy. Is that what the Tea Party Rebellion was all about?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin, but the wait is. Everything's raisin, but the wait is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin, but the wait is. Everything's raising, but the
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Well, it's official. Today it began in Wisconsin. That's right. They're beginning to look at the nearly 1.5 million ballots that were cast earlier this month in the state Supreme Court race between incumbent Justice David Prosser and Joanne Kloppenberg. Now look, you know, nobody thinks anything's going to change in this, but because it did fall within that 0.5% range, the loser has the ability to ask for a recount, which Kloppenberg has done. Now, the people who oversee this, the Government Accountability Board, they're one of these watchdog groups, who will conduct the recount. They say that they expect this to run through May 9th. Which is kind of a ways down the road. Now, if you remember, on election night, you know, the next day, Kloppenberg had a 204-vote lead. And then magically, like out of the blue, you know, like just wonderfully. 14,000 votes appeared from a heavily, heavily Republican Waukesha county area, Waukesha area, which gave Prosser a 7,000 vote lead. So this woman, who was basically a Republican operative, she just found these 14,000 votes on her computer. And you could say it's a mistake. You could say, well, it smells fishy. You could say, she's no good at her job. She's incompetent, or she's just plain stupid. Well, the folks at the General Accountability Board found that she's just stupid. So we will see how this turns out. Currently, the High Court has a 4-3 conservative majority. It doesn't appear as though that is going to change. And it's important to note that, all of that stuff that Walker did that was illegal, these guys are going to be voting on. So this was an important race. And it's interesting that how much money went into a state Supreme Court race. $4.5 million in outside of the state money. So you had $4.5 million come into that race from out of the state. 2.7 of it was Prosser, 1.8 for Kloppenburg. So that's kind of an interesting thing. The Republicans in Wisconsin, since we're talking about Wisconsin, they are proposing legislation just like they want to do here in Pennsylvania and a lot of states across the country. They want to make it harder for young people and poor people to vote. Assembly Bill 7, which has been drafted by Republican Representative Jeff Stone, will require voters to show a Wisconsin driver's license, a state-issued ID card, a military ID card, a passport, or a naturalization certificate. They would also require that you provide both your current address and previous addresses, as well as signing the book saying that you voted. The guy who's the chairman of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, Mike Tate, said it is morally repugnant what they are doing, and I tend to agree. But here's the thing. I mean, there's all of this push towards more information. You look at the fact that the U.S. State Department is now proposing a new questionnaire for passports, and this just amazing to me that right now it's going to be almost impossible to get a passport. Because according to this new application, you have got to list every single residence and every single job you have ever held since the day you were conceived. So wherever your parents lived when you were conceived, it's got to be on the form. Maybe not that far back, but as soon as you popped out, you got to know where you're going. Yep, it's all got to be there on the new State Department. This is a proposed questionnaire for your passport, but. I mean, to me, it's just nuts. I mean, doesn't that seem excessive?
Yes. They're looking for...
What they're looking for is they're looking to harass people like you and me. They're looking to give you this false sense of security, this illusion. If they're screening me this thoroughly, they're going after Ahmed, and as long I'll put up with it as long as they're going after Ahmed. When the reality is Ahmed's smart enough to go, yeah, okay, I'll fill out the form and we'll make up whatever we need to make up to get through it. It's just you, the person who, the average everyday working stiff who's going to get the...
And I guess my question is, let's say you do that and you list all the jobs that your parents had, blah, blah, blah. Where are we going to get the personnel to check all that?
Well, it's probably taking a year to get a passport.
Good Lord.
It's just nuts. If they got the porno scanners at the airport, this seems mild comparing to being strip searched visually. Which again, like I said from the beginning, I think the answer to our flight problems, fly naked. I just think that's the answer. Again, I believe that's the answer.
Yeah, but Rick, people will see you and turn around.
They don't have to look.
Okay.
You can look at the really, really attractive blonde up in row C. Trust me, if you've got one really attractive person, nobody's looking at me. And definitely nobody's looking at you.
Well, that's a given.
There you go.
Well, all kidding aside, I do believe that we should have armed guards in each flight.
Yeah, so they can shoot out the windows.
No, I really do. And I'm not saying, with a big sign, I'm the guard. I mean, someone that's surreptitious, so we say.
At least you should, and I think they have done this for the most part, sealed off the cockpit doors, hardened the cockpit doors, so you can't get back and forth. Anyway, it seems that that Harry Reid's going to take a look at holding a vote on Paul Ryan's controversial budget. This might be interesting. You know, I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but they're going to.
I would force the senators, Republican side, to make a. It'd be very interesting because those Republicans, one, they know Obama's going to. He's going to veto it, and two, it isn't going to pass the Senate.
No.
So are they going to, as a party, make a statement?
Well, it's about having the conversation. And look, you know, they've. And I've been loving these town hall meetings. They've been interesting, to say the least. But, you know, you've got to have this out there for people to start discussing, I guess. And in watching these town halls, which have been great, one of them, this Alan West, and we talked a little bit about Alan last night, but he had another one last night where this internet talk show host, her name's Nicole Sandler, where she was being escorted out. I guess she got loud and rowdy inside and, you know, caused a ruckus, and they went to throw her out. And, you know, she turned and, you know, don't you touch me! And she flashed her camera in the cop's face, and the cop arrested her. So they threw her in jail, and she claimed, you know, today that they maced her because she didn't go back into a holding cell or something. And, you know, the more I look at this, and look, it's a bad situation all around. These town hall meetings have erupted, just like in Lebanon. I got to tell you, that guy would have gotten in my face. I'd have knocked him on his backside. But that's just me. And that's where some of these town hall meetings can lead into this. So that's why they moved this woman out.
If you noticed, Rick, they're calling quite a few of these people are just calling them out and calling them liars.
Yep.
When they try to say, well, that's not what we voted for. Yeah, but that is what you voted for.
Come on. Knew it.
You know, don't give me this.
Ignorant.
This is a blueprint. Blueprint my butt. This, you voted for it. You knew what it stood for. You knew what it was. You did it out of party loyalty. Now own up to it.
So
man up.
So our internet host, she ended up going to jail. And personally, there's part thinks that's what she was hoping for. And oddly enough, I don't really care. You know, as I watch the video, I go, I probably would have arrested her too. And for being obnoxious, I probably would have maced her as well. that's just me. You know, that's
well,
just
maybe
me.
She's
but
used
here's the
to
thing.
Being obnoxious on the air.
But oddly enough, I care more about the next story than hers. There's a group in San Francisco. And this tells you how little I care about her being arrested. There's a group in San Francisco who wants to ban circumcisions. They claim that circumcisions are unconstitutional and that they are not an infringement on religious freedom. So, again, there's something I care about more than this woman being arrested. So good for them.
Oh, my. Is that the most important thing we can come up with? I mean, really?
There's part of me that thinks the folks in San Francisco have too much time in their hands. Maybe they need jobs. Because, you know, again, you know, I don't know. I just don't know sometimes. But these town halls have been hysterical. And what you got to give the Republicans credit. They've gone out there. They've figured out how to manipulate people like this Nicole Sandler, who now the story is she was out, you know, you got even me who might ideologically be on her side watching the video of her screaming and putting the camera in the cop's face and I'm going to take your picture going, hey, you know, come on.
Well, but I also saw a woman who was irate and she said, look, at one of the town hall meetings today. And I think she's expressing feelings of a lot of Americans. She said, look, I'm tired of you standing up for the rich. I want you to stand up for me, and I'm tired of it. And that, you know, that speaks for millions of Americans, Rick, when you're talking about a congressman who probably never even talked about it when they ran, most of them. Now, some of the Tea Party might have, but most of them didn't. They ran on, you know, times are tough and we're spending too much money, blah, 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 the typical conservative. But they'd never once probably said anything about privatizing Medicare or Social Security, and now.
But hold on, I'm not giving you a pass on. I'm not giving people a pass on that. Anybody who doesn't have their head up their keister knows that the Republican Party has been against Medicare, has been against Social Security, has been against Medicaid, has been against any type of social safety net in this country from day one. So why would it surprise anyone magically out of the blue when they have the ability to do that they do it?
but they're expressing their anger right to them, and that's good.
That is good.
Let them know. Look, you keep, unless you change, you're in for a dogfight the next time. And if anything, if any politician hates anything, it's not to be reelected. No. Let's be honest.
You don't want to be a loser. We're going to come back with Mark Steer from Penn Action. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776. We are people helping people.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
You know, we've been seeing these town halls. Paul Ryan gets booed at his. People are arrested at Allen West's. That crackpot up north of here, Lou Barlotta, he gets shouted down. People are upset. You don't take their Medicare. You don't take their Social Security. You just, and the caveat of, oh, it's not going to affect you. It's just going to be those people under 55, those people younger than you. So don't worry about it. We're going to take care of you. So you greedy geezers, don't worry about it. At least that's what they're telling us. I've got Mark Steer on the line, Executive Director of Penn Action, the website pennaction.org. Mark, thanks for taking time for us.
My pleasure, Rick.
You know, we're seeing these action, these town halls across the country. I guess the right's getting some of the what they put out in the last election.
Yeah, and this time we're telling the truth. We're not making up stories about what the Republicans are intending to do. We just say what they're intending to do, and people say, oh, my God, that's horrible. And, you know, the weird thing is the more you tell people about it, the less they like it. There was a poll I saw that basically gives an overview of it. 74% of people said, we don't like this Medicare plan. And then they went into detail and described, you know, basically what it does right from the horse's mouth. And then 84% said, no, we really don't like it.
And tomorrow, a big day, along with being Workers' Memorial Day, there's a day of action. Don't make us work until we die. The people over at strengthensocialsecurity.org, again, drawing attention to the fact that the Republicans, and I can't imagine there's anybody who would be surprised that the right wants to destroy Social Security and Medicare. I just don't see it. I can't fathom how you can wake up one day and go, what? They want to take it away?
Well, you know what? It really is part of their economic strategy. Their goal is to drive down private sector wages and to lower taxes for rich people. And the way they do it is two things. Number one, they reduce number of public sector jobs, which puts unemployed people into the workforce, helping hold down wages in the private sector. And then they make it harder for people to retire, either by taking away their Social Security or forcing them to work longer to get to keep their health care. That expands the job pool and also drives down wages. I mean, and that increases profits for big business. That's what it's all about. I mean, just connect the dots and you see that their economic policy is to hurt working people in the middle class. It's not a byproduct of their policy. It is the intent of their policy.
Do you know, and I've had people, I've said that to people, and they've said, well, you know, Republicans aren't bad people. They just have different views. And I'm saying, look, these no good for nothings. These are evil people. I mean, honestly and truthfully, I believe they're downright evil. When you want to talk about cutting $1.7 billion in funding for Social Security as they have voted on in H.R. 1, to me, that is just downright evil.
Yeah, you know, that's what everyone would say. Well, we have two different views of how to attain the common good. That's not true. Democrats are trying to help working people in the middle class. They're not doing as good enough job as they should be, but most of them really intend to do that. The goal of Republican public policy today is to help the top 1%, and that means hurting working people in the middle class. That's how they intend to do it. These are not your grandfather's Republicans. It's not Dwight Eisenhower. It's not Richard Nixon. These are people with a really bad intent. I totally agree with you.
And you know, they count, but the thing that you got to give them credit for is they are masters at linguistic manipulation. They are masters at campaign slogans. They are masters in simple-minded, simplistic bumper sticker speak.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got to do the same thing. And we not make up stories the way they do, but simply tell people the truth. And we're really afraid to do it. And the sad thing is, if you look at some of the deeper polls where people ask, do you have faith in capitalism anymore? Do you have faith in our big corporations? They're dropping, and I have not seen a major newspaper in America mention that. I read that in The Economist, a London magazine, that showed worldwide people's faith in big corporations and even in capitalism itself is dropping because working people are getting hurt. And our politicians, even our Democratic ones, are afraid to go out and say, we need to fix the system. We need to make the system work for everyone, not for just the top 1%. They're not going to say it. We're going to keep saying it until people realize that's the way to build a progressive majority in this country.
Yeah, I agree, but are you surprised at the number of people who've bought into this whole Ayn Rand nonsense, this radical self-interest, this belief in, the greed, the Gordon Gekko greed is good?
You know, I don't know that there's that many people who believe it, although I got to tell you, I got some Facebook friends on the right who say the most appalling things to me. And then they want to walk away from it. They say, it's really about trying to make the economy better for everyone, and the marketplace will do it. But then when you push them on it, when you say, look, the Ryan plan is going to replace Medicare, a real benefit, with a voucher that will not pay for the benefit in the first year that people get now, and over 10 years will pay for only a third of the benefit they get now. And they say, no, that's not really what we want. And then I say, but that's what you're calling for. He says, well, and then they back up and say, well, you know, we really can't be responsible for these leeches who rely on the, and then they go the Ayn Rand thing, the rely on the productive people. And I say, you know what? Those people you're calling leeches are your parents and your grandparents.
My grandparents. The first thing that popped
up. My grandparents. And they've worked hard their whole life, and they are entitled to a decent retirement. And our whole society should be prepared to pay what it takes to provide a decent retirement and decent health care for our seniors. And we could do it effectively and efficiently if we were really going to address the real cost drivers in health care. But that they're not interested in.
I mean, beyond, and I've had these conversations as well, beyond the sloganeering and the talking points, there's no real depth. I mean, I found that with my conservative friends, you can't have an honest discussion without it ended up in a shouting match. And yeah, what does that say about our country, though?
Yeah, I have actually some conservative friends. There's a guy on Facebook who's a friend of mine I've known for a number of years. And, you know, I think if we sat down, we would still disagree. But we could agree on the basic facts of the matter. And, you know, he'd want a little more market and a little less government than I would. But he recognizes that we have a responsibility to the elderly. He recognizes that we have to get everyone health care. But then there's the folks who just repeat the talking points of the right-wing politicians and of Rush Limbaugh. And they're not thinking anymore. They're just sounding slogans.
Just regurgitation. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Mark Steer, Executive Director of Penn Action. PennAction.org is their website. You know, and going forward, you know, you talked about the Medicare vouchers that they want to hand out here in Pennsylvania and in a number of other states. They want education vouchers. What is it do you think it is about this love of the voucher that the right seems to be hung up on? Me, I think it's just privatization, but it's this love of here's this thing we're giving you. It's kind of strange to me.
You know, I think it mostly is about destroying the public sector and public sector jobs, because usually it's a foot in the door. I mean, take a look at this Medicare thing. They're going to give people $9,000. Now, that will provide not the benefits we have now, but something close to it the first year. But they're going to increase the benefit only by the rate of inflation plus 1%, which is much less than the rate of healthcare inflation, which means by the 10th year, that voucher will be worth about a third of what it is, what you get in Medicare. So ultimately, it's really a way to destroy Medicare. That is the ultimate goal, to destroy a publicly supported healthcare for seniors. And that's, you know, in education, I think vouchers are ultimately aimed at the same thing, at destroying the public schools.
So tomorrow, Workers' Memorial Day, there are a number of actions planned by the people of StrengthenSocialSecurity.org here in the state of Pennsylvania to raise awareness to the fact that what's going on with the folks in Congress, that they want to destroy Social Security and Medicare and replace it with this bizarre voucher in the case of Medicare. What should I do? What should our listeners do? Your thoughts.
Well, if in the areas where we're doing these events, we'd love you to come out. We have one in Chester at 10:45 tomorrow morning on Crosby Street at the Social Security office there. And then we have one in Langhorne in Bucks County at 4:00 at Congressman Fitzpatrick's office. So, you know, I hope people in those areas come out. On the 29th, we have one in Wilkes-Barre at the public square. And we did one in Pittsburgh today. And then we're going to be getting out petitions in some of these congressional districts to ask constituents to sign them that we will deliver to some of these congressmen later down the road. So I would suggest, if you're interested in the issue and you want to keep working on it, go to our website, PennAction.org, sign up there, and we'll keep you informed about petitions and ways to contact your own legislators and tell them that you don't want end of Medicare.
And we will get
the whole Ryan budget.
And we will get a link over at our site at thericksmithshow.com. And if you live in the districts of the 7th Congressional District with Meehan, or the 8th with Fitzpatrick, or the 10th with Marino, or the 11th with Barlotta, or the 18th with Murphy, call their offices. They're the folks that they're targeting to say, you know what, you might want to reconsider that vote.
Yeah, and let me just say, we're doing these events with Action United. So we're co-leading this campaign in Pennsylvania, and we got a lot of allies from the AFL and the SEIU and other groups.
That's what it's going to take. It's going to take the organizations coming together, putting aside any differences they may have had in the past, and working toward moving us forward. Mark Steer, Executive Director of Penn Action, PennAction.org. Appreciate your time. Always great talking to you, buddy.
Same here. Thanks very much.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
PSECU, we know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012, and we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSECU Visa.
The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pscc.com/life. Get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Everybody ready? Let's do this!
We're here at Carter McRae Elementary School. We teach exercise every day, and we love it.
Capital Blue Cross helps sponsor the program, so one of our medical directors, Rick Hammer, dropped by.
Capital Blue Cross is interested in supporting initiatives like this because we're trying to build healthy lifestyles, and the best place to start is with children.
It means a lot to teacher Dawn Evans.
Sometimes exercise is the one thing that a child does really successfully, and to start their day with success and with smiles, it impacts the rest of the day.
Keith Corrigan, who leads the exercises, agrees.
It's wonderful. I'm glad Capital Blue Cross did step in. It's good for the kids. It's good for the teachers. It's good for the school.
When you care more, you do more.
If it's the right thing to do, then we like to try to find a way to do it.
I can't hear you. Did you get a workout this morning?
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Just peachy. Just dandy. With our little doilies on the dish and little pinky up in the air. Anyway, there were 12 actions across the state today, with Comcast being the target. And the reality is Comcast is a $38 billion corporation with hundreds of subsidiaries across the state. A couple of groups, the Pennsylvania State Education Association and the Service Employees International Union, organized the actions to coincide with the introduction of Pennsylvania State Representative Phyllis Mundy's legislation to close the Delaware tax loophole. As you know, look, the reality is this loophole allows corporations here in Pennsylvania to move their profits to a P.O. box in Delaware. And they're saying that as a state, we're losing somewhere in the $500 million range. Now, Monday's piece of legislation is going to take, again, going back to this idea that we're going to lower the corporate tax rate, close the loopholes, the Delaware loophole being one of them. And in some cases, this is not a bad idea. It is just if we leave the loopholes closed. That's my problem. Anyway, she's going to drop the corporate tax rate down from 9.99% down to 7.4% over the next couple of years. And, you know, she says, look, you know, homegrown Pennsylvania-based businesses have to pay the tax, but these large corporations like Walmart, like ExxonMobil, use this scheme to skirt paying their fair share of taxes to Pennsylvania. She says it's unfair to our good corporate citizens, and it's time to close the loophole. Now look, here's how this whole scheme works. It's pretty simple. If you're a company operating in Pennsylvania, you set up a shell corporation. You incorporate it in Delaware. You get yourself a P.O. box, and you just pay all of the trademark money, all the patent money, all of their investments to this other corporation. And it goes to Delaware, and boom, it's done. So if the Rick Smith Show trademarked my name, you know, like Sarah Palin's doing, like her and Bristol are in the process of doing, trademarking their name, so they will be the symbol known as Palin. I could get this P.O. box in Delaware because I'm incorporated. I'm now not a person. I'm an entity. I can set up a corporation in Delaware, get myself a nice little P.O. box in one of those buildings that's got thousands of companies in it, you know, kind of like Boeing. Boeing's headquarters is in Chicago. Their production is in Seattle, but they're incorporated in Delaware. Why? They can run their profits through. Very nice. So I incorporate my trademark there.
I'd pay my trademark exactly the amount of profit that I made here in Pennsylvania. And there you have it. Zero tax burden. I don't pay anything because I've paid my corporation in Delaware charged me exactly what my profit would have been. I'm even Stephen here in Pennsylvania. And I now have a major, major comparative advantage over my competition. So, you know, if I'm a manufacturing facility, multi-state deal, not a mom and pop, I've got a major, major advantage. So what we need to be doing, and this is what Phyllis Mundy's bill wants to do, we want to adopt some combined reporting. Require corporations and their subsidiaries and the P.O. box in Delaware to file one return and pay the taxes according to where that money came from. I think it's a good idea. 23 other states have the exact legislation. They've closed the loophole. Now, from Monday's press release, according to the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue, over 70% of multi-state corporations doing business in Pennsylvania paid nothing in corporate income, net income taxes in 2007. Another 10% paid less than $1,000. So 80% of the companies in this state paid nothing or less than $1,000. Now, a family making $33,000 a year, you just paid more than a corporation did. And it's costing us. It's costing us $500 million a year. And yet what we're talking about in this state is we're talking about cutting $1 billion from education. Here is a way to get half of that money back. Here is a way to stave off some of that pain and suffering for the next generation. And I guess what has to happen, and Reuters reported this today, that the parents of kids, the parents are going to have to come together and sue somebody, like they're doing to Mike Bloomberg there in New York. They're suing him for $100 million of his own dollars for hiring some nitwit with no experience who worked for 95 days, screwed things up, and then left. Why? Because she's a buddy of Bloomie's, and, you know, she's got experience running the Hearst magazine, which I don't know what that has to do with education. I'm sorry. It's almost as dumb as putting Michael Brown in charge of FEMA. Not getting it. But he did. She lasted 95 days. And good for her, realizing she's not fit for the job, she left. But here, now these people are saying, you know what? You now owe the city, you owe my kids $100 million. Maybe that's what we've got to do. But I remember that rally yesterday that I went to where the college kids came from around the state. And one kid in particular caught my attention. And he had really a very valid point. He said, we're not dropping out of college. We're being pushed out. It's not that they can't do the work. It's that they can't afford it. It's not that they don't want the opportunity. It's that it's being stolen from them. And it's being stolen from them, why? So we can enrich more corporations. So we can hand out tax dollars. So we don't have to raise taxes. To me, just plain dumb and evil. And, you know, I look at this, Jake, and it's frustrating on a number of levels because we're not even talking about it's already been framed for us. We have spending problems. No, we got revenue problems. We could be closing the Delaware loophole, $500 million. We could be taxing the drillers anywhere from $200 million to however big this whole thing gets. We're talking a lot of money.
Absolutely. And don't forget the cigars and the smokeless tobacco while we're at it. That should have been closed a long time ago. A lot of options here in the governor, but he's been adamant. He's been adamant about not taxing Marcello Shale. But I think his numbers are going, or he's dropping like a rock in the polls.
Oh, but Jake, the conservative wave missed Pennsylvania. That whole craziness just went by. We're more pragmatic here. Our Republicans are more moderate. You know, they're not going to destroy education. No, you know, taking $1 billion from it and cutting higher education by 56% and then starting some bizarre privatization scheme where you're going to have some big folks winning by setting up these schools that are going to be fly-by-night institutions that are going to come and go and leave the kids stranded. Don't worry about that. All is fine. Go back to American Idol. Go back to your bowl of Cheetos. All is fine. Because we have more pragmatic, moderate Republicans here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. The vouchers, if the vouchers pass, I mean, they're going to hurt. They're going to hurt public schools. I mean, you have already seen the precursor where some of these school districts right around this area are starting to cut into the real sinew of education out of sheer necessity. And that's terrible. That's horrible. It's the wrong way to go. I mean, think about it, Rick. We have less jobs. We have less opportunity. Public school is the one hope for a lot of these kids, especially the middle-income and the poor kids. It's their only way out of a decent life.
You know, this kid who said, you know, we're not dropping out of college, we're being pushed out. The kid that I met at the last rally. You said, if I don't get a college education, there's nowhere for me. There's no factory left. There's nothing to go back to. That's what we're taking away. Mm-hmm. And during the break, Bob sent me an email. And of course, you want to email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all of them. Bob writes, I think we are too focused on who loses by privatization of Social Security, et cetera. And we need to broaden our vision to also include who the winners are, who they're going to be in such a privatizing way of these programs. These corporations and financial planners will siphon out millions and billions of dollars from taxpayers. So once again, we are back to reducing the budget or merely transferring the wealth back to the rich, or as the Tea Parties love to call it. You know, I look at this and look, you know, the reality, folks, is Bob's right. This is another, the voucher thing, this whole slashing of education, this is a wealth transfer. This is a wealth transfer from the poor kids' future to the folks who are already doing really well. This whole Delaware loophole thing, it's stealing money from the state that the majority of other states have already cut off so they can have just a little more. And as I've said a number of times, these battles, for them, are not the end of the world. If they win this battle, they're just going to win a little more. They're going to have a couple more shackles to put in their pocket, a couple more bucks to go jing-jing in their pockets. But if you and I, if we win these battles, we just get to survive to fight tomorrow. Because it never ends. These attacks never end. This theft of wealth from the working class never ends. And I got to tell you, at some point, and, you know, when we talk with Bruce Levine about his book, Get Up, Stand Up, he had a good point. My view of that, you know, things have to get really, really bad before people get active and motivated. I hope he's right that, you know, there's organizing that can happen before then. But I look at these kids, if after finals they don't come back here with their toothbrush and their sleeping bag, I don't know what's going to happen to that budget.
Well, I do see some signs that the youngsters are really grasping what's happening, and I hope so, because they, above any other group, have more to lose. It's their world, it's their country, and they better, out of necessity, start fighting.
Well, I hope so. Anyway, as we move down the road to this, we're going to be talking an awful lot about the budget and the unemployment fight that is coming. Here in the next couple of days, we're going to be trying to gather up some folks to talk about the unemployment fight, which to me just seems kind of dumb. There's federal money out there. Why aren't the Republicans moving, passing an unemployment bill that's going to extend unemployment benefits to the folks who need it to keep folks in their homes, keep dollars going into the economy when there's money from the feds to pay for it? Again, you know, that blind faith ideology on one hand, but the other hand is, there's part of me that thinks that these are the folks who are pulling flies' wings off, who are frying magnets under the ants under the magnifying glass. These are the kind of folks I think they are. But, you know, that's just me being mean. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that AT&T decision today, which I think is so important. I think this is one of the biggest decisions in a while. So we're right back after this.
Just call me. uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Mediation Board Tuesday announced the voting schedule for a union representation election for 24,000 flight attendants at United, Continental, and Continental Micronesia Airlines. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says flight attendants are ready to take control of their careers at the world's largest airline, formed from the merger of United and Continental. Ballots will be sent to the flight attendants on May 17th, and voting closes on June 29th. Vermont's Senate passed the Universal Health Care Bill Tuesday. The Grassroots Health Care as a Human Rights Campaign cheered its passage and is calling for the strongest possible final version of the bill, which now must be reconciled with Vermont's House. A May 1st rally at Vermont's Capitol will urge lawmakers to stand up to the corporate interests in health care industry, which will be trying to weaken the bill. The Health Care as a Human Right Campaign says it will draw upon the human rights principles of universality, equity, accountability, transparency, and participation to push to strengthen the final version of the law. It's been 25 years since the disaster at Chernobyl. Jesse Russell reports.
Tuesday marked the 25th anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. On that date in 1986, reactor number 4 exploded, impacting the Ukraine and neighboring countries. A memorial service was held on Tuesday in Kiev to mark the occasion of the world's worst man-made nuclear accident. Nearly three decades later, workers are still needed to do upkeep on a container that was built around the plant to reduce radiation leakage. Ukraine continues to hope to raise more than $1.1 billion that would be used to build a massive dome over the plant and the surrounding land. The country is $300 million short. Until that money is raised, workers will continue to perform maintenance on the facility. 330,000 residents within the 77,000 square mile radius of the reactor were evacuated, leaving a nearly barren and unoccupied zone of empty buildings. Workers that took part in the cleanup, dubbed liquidators, are still fighting the state due to cuts that have reduced pensions, housing allowances, and medical care. Ukraine has been recovering from the worldwide recession, and the government has claimed it can't afford to keep the promises made two decades ago.
A grassroots group called U.S. Uncut NYC will teach corporate tax evaders a lesson this Saturday. The group says it will take over a private space at an undisclosed Manhattan location and use it as a classroom on the consequences of corporate tax evasion. This newscast made possible in part by the American Federation of Teachers, a union of professionals, and by OPEIU, the Office and Professional Employees International Union. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, I guess chalk it up to another victory for corporate America. Their Supreme Court has delivered again. And I guess, you know, that's what all that money was for. And I guess, isn't that what they're there for? Isn't that why we have a Supreme Court, to make sure that the well-to-do are well taken care of, to make sure the all-too-powerful remain so, you know, so that we, the people, can stop oppressing them? I guess that's to me, kind of what this is about. But I'm sure there are those who will minimize this AT&T decision. That's why I've asked Cliff Pilewski, founding member of the National Employment Law Association, NELA.org, to come talk to us. Cliff, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been enjoying the show.
You know, I'm looking at this decision, and help me here, because maybe I'm viewing this in the wrong light. While it is something that you could say, if the consumer read the contract, they could have walked away from it. To me, this is taking us back to the good old days of liberty of contract.
Oh, you're not overstating it. In fact, it's impossible to overstate how profound this one is. And unfortunately, the birth certificate debate has kept this low key. Let me put this in some kind of context. Arbitrators are not required to know or follow the law to start with, and obviously they're their goal here is to have satisfied customers.
Right.
And when there are repeat customers, that's usually the big corporation. These are corporate courts to start with, under the best of circumstances. But there are certain kinds of small claims, frauds. When you get cheated out of $2 on your phone bill, or you don't get paid your overtime, or things of that sort that are just simply too small to practically get a lawyer and go through a lawsuit. And the only way that consumers and workers protect themselves is by joining together. I mean, the very essence of our labor laws, as you know, is the right to concerted action, to join together, because that's the only way certain rights can be vindicated. And in fact, several of our employment statutes, like the Fair Labor Standards Act that sets minimum wage requirements, specifically authorizes class actions. And the ADEA, recognizing that that's really the only way workers can enforce these rights, to share the cost and to share the risk. And the Supreme Court just said that corporations can effectively prohibit you from filing a class action and prohibit you from going to court, and that your only remedy for the violation of critical federal statutes that people have fought and died for is to go to a corporate court, to a judge who's paid by the corporation, who's concerned about getting repeat business, who is not required to follow the law. And what's ironic is they said that that kind of arbitrary system is unfair to defendants, that it would be unfair to force defendants to put so much at risk in such an arbitrary setting. But it's not unfair to workers, and it's not unfair to consumers to lose their life savings, to lose their job, to be falsely accused of something at work. It's hard to imagine a more intellectually dishonest and corporate biased decision.
What do you say to the person who says, who looks at just what's written about this decision, that it's just a couple of consumers who thought they got cheated on their AT&T bill because they were charged $30 for a tax for a free phone? Because we like to minimize things and take it down to its lowest common denominator, which is, you know, the people should have read the contract, and they could have walked away from the contract.
Well, you realistically can't walk away. A lot of times you don't get the contract until after the transaction. And of course, most people don't read them, and of course, most people don't understand all of the legal provisions and what the law requires. But in certain contexts, it's truer than others. You may be able to turn down a particular free offer of a credit card, but you certainly don't have the option to turn down a job in this economy and to turn down health care. And when your boss comes to you after 15 years and you've got some pre-existing conditions and says, sign this or you're fired, we don't talk about choice. In fact, it's been over 100 years since we viewed that kind of free market paradigm in the workplace. That's
because one of the first things I talked about, to be honest, is it sounds a lot to me like going back to the days before we outlawed yellow dog contracts.
But this is a yellow dog contract. That is the perfect analogy. It's exactly what it is. In fact, to our labor laws, the Norris LaGuardia Act and National Labor Relations Act start off by saying we recognize that because we've allowed corporations to accumulate wealth and operate in this format, that individual workers do not have the freedom to negotiate terms of labor. I mean, they say that's the national public policy. And somehow the Supreme Court has turned it on its head and created a public policy of clear my docket and send everything to corporate courts. And they'd have a hard time finding that one in the Constitution.
You know, but I look at this, and again, it goes back to a lot of money has gone into sitting this court. There's been a lot of campaign contributions that have gotten us to this point, and the corporations, they want their money back.
Well, the corporations, you know, want their money back, and they're buying elections, and the elections are buying judges. The judges themselves aren't getting much in the way of money, but they've appointed some very, very political judges, and this is Justice Scalia. I mean, this is the civil rights, consumer rights version of Bush versus Gore, where he just made something up and used rules that are completely contrary to what he normally would do. States' rights. I mean, what they basically said, the law itself says that these contracts are subject to being struck down according to any normal state law contract concept. And for years, including the United States Supreme Court up until a few months ago, kept issuing decisions saying that you can bring a claim of unconscionability under state law. And for the first time in history, they just threw that out the window and said, even though the law says it, even though we've said it, in every case up until now, we've just decided that, that we're not going to let you use fairness doctrines developed in the state court that would be used in any context. Because state California law, for instance, doesn't permit bans on class actions in arbitration or in court because they serve the public interest.
Right. So basically how I'm getting this, and help me here if I'm wrong, so that if I go for a job, again, like Walmart was recently in front of the Supreme Court for a discrimination case,
right,
where they said, well, you know, it's not that we didn't discriminate, but they shouldn't be able to file a class action suit. So
because we discriminated against so many people. Their claim there was that it's too big of a class. We've wronged too many people, and it's unwieldy.
So again, you know, all of these things kind of building up, and I look at, I had read a while ago about a case, Rent-A-Center versus Jackson,
right,
where that forced this guy to go into an arbitrator over something that he signed pre-employment.
Well, not only that, they said that it was what that case actually said was that if there's something unfair in the agreement, like the selection of the arbitrator or how much it costs or the rules, the arbitrator gets to decide whether it's fair or not instead of a court. I mean, think about that for a second. That if someone forces an agreement on you, not a negotiated agreement, but a form contract, it's one thing to say you go to arbitration and you can go to court and say, Your Honor, but this is not fair. I need some depositions. I need full remedies. I need a neutral arbitrator. But what the Supreme Court says is that if you also put in that form contract, that the arbitrator decides that you can shut the court system out altogether. So forget rule of law. Forget due process. Forget the rules and laws that have been passed to protect workers and consumers. This is an unbelievable decision. You cannot have a corporate democracy, a constitutional democracy, when you turn over the justice system and the enforcement of the laws to the corporations instead of the courts. My attitude is, if you don't want to be a judge, then give up your role to somebody who does. And why do we have public courts if they view their role as shunting cases into private corporate courts?
I have listeners who love to say that we're already not down the road to being a fascist nation, but we are already a fascist nation. And I don't want to get tied up in the whole, emotion attached to that word. But you look at this situation where we are now corporatizing a court system. I don't know how you can argue it.
That's right. Well, not only are you privatizing it and introducing money, which is the most corrupting influence ever, you know, known to man or woman. But you're putting it into secret rooms. I mean, there is no such thing as justice dispensed in private. We used to mock the Soviet Union for suggesting that they had a private civil justice system. So there's no way that anyone could honestly try to design a justice system or even call this a justice system when you're precluded from bringing claims and even an incorrect decision has to stand. That's not a justice system. That's just, you know, a flip of a coin. That's a dispute resolution system. And that's not the American way.
So we've laid out the problem, and the problem is this is a horrible decision. What's the remedy?
Right now, the only remedy is really legislation.
Is there anything pending?
Well, they introduced something called the Arbitration Fairness Act, which would prohibit mandatory arbitration agreements, pre-dispute agreements, in the consumer context and the worker context. It's a great law. It would do nothing except restore the Constitution. But realistically, with the Republicans in control of the House, it's going to be hard to...
What do you mean? The party of the Constitution? The people who love to spout how their love of the Constitution? And I probably haven't read it, but they seem to love it. Wouldn't this, as you've said, restore that?
Well, you know, it would restore it, but that's such a dishonest slogan. In fact, these are all distractions. All of these side issues about birth certificates and even the lifestyle issues are all distractions from what's happening in the civil courts and in our communities and to workers and to workers' rights. And I'm not distracted, but I'm getting a bit demoralized that the rest of the country continually votes against their own interests.
Which is why we have to continue to talk about this stuff, because I think it's important that that working people realize that these decisions, while they sound, well, you should have, because when I first read it, and before I started to filter it, well, you should have read the contract and not paid the $30, argue the $30. But then when you dig into it and you start thinking of the implications down the road, man, this is dangerous.
Well, when you get a contract, you don't know what it's going to be in their first bill. You know, they sell you something. That's what happened here, is they advertise a free phone. And they end up getting a bill for $30. And if the case is not valid, it will get thrown out. If the case is not valid, then the lawyers who brought it will have worked for free.
Right.
So there are plenty of disincentives about bringing stupid cases. But to say that, that you're not allowed to bring a class action when the law authorizes it, that, that people have a get out of jail free for little frauds and cheating people at a little bits of money. Boy, oh boy, whatever happened to the rule of law?
It has been bought and paid for by the corporations.
That's the truth. That's the truth. And I think we need a lot of noise, because so many legislators say, well, you know, elections are coming up and corporations contribute to our campaigns, and it's a big issue for the Chamber of Commerce. But this is the ball game. This is where Congress passes a law and the company that they're trying to regulate says, thank you very much, but I'm not interested in being regulated by that law. That can't be. I don't need to attach any particular label to it, but it's lawlessness. And that can't be.
I'm right there with you.
Any ideas would be helpful, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is just returning us to the days of Lochner and the liberty of contract and doing away
with slavery almost. You know, when the Federal Arbitration Act was passed, labor leaders got up in the most poetic fashion and start talking about Esau sold his birthright because he was hungry. Workers who need food, you know, will sign what they have to sign to keep their job, that this is going to lead to indentured servitude. Yeah. And when you think about coming to work and being told, you've got to sign this contract, and it says you can't quit. And if you decide to quit, no matter what, you got to pay me $25,000, and you can't work for a competitor. And every claim has to go to arbitration. And they basically go to an arbitrator who says, you bet. You pay me, and here's your order. I mean, literally, the labor leaders of the 20s were 100% right.
Yeah,
the Supreme Court's opened the door.
What I've said from the beginning is, you know, the very wealthy learned from slavery. Don't buy them, just rent them and make them take care of themselves.
Well, now they use co-employers, so they're not even technically your slaves. You can hire them from TriNet, who will cover all of their expenses and payroll obligations.
We've got a lot of work to do, Cliff.
Well, thanks for doing what you do, my friend.
I appreciate your time, Cliff Pilewski, founding board member of the National Employment Law Association, NELA.org. We've got a link on our site at therickSmithShow.com. Cliff, thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner error, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitive use of child labor was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show. I give my head to the new constitution. Think about
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, you talk about these employment issues, and I think it's important to highlight the fact that, you know, I've known people throughout my life who have said, you know, Rick, if they fire me, I'll just go get a lawyer and I'll sue, because they think that there are laws out there to protect them. They think that, you know, we're a developed country. We're one of the wealthiest countries in the world. And I see those workers over there who have rights. So they think that they have them. Because those workers over there, they've got a contract, man. It spells it out. It's a legally binding contract. It says this is how you fire people. And what's happened in this country, and again, I go back to this Bruce Levine and his book, Get Up, Stand Up, which I think is worth picking up. You go back to this what I've been talking about a while, the Stockholm syndrome that we all seem to be suffering from. That, oh, you know, I'm just happy to have a job. Oh, thank you, employer. I'll take whatever abuse. I'll work the long hours. I'll work through my break. I'll take on extra work, a ton of extra stress. I'll take on all that stuff just so I can feed my kids. And what I say is, you know, at the end of this whole road, man, it's about dignity. It's about respect. It's about having a say. You know, I don't know a CEO in this country who doesn't have a contract. I don't think there is one. They've all got them. But they work very hard at making sure that you don't. And we've bought into this. We've bought into this idea that, you know, if I play by the rules, they're going to treat me fairly. If I come in and I do my best every day, they're going to reward me and treat me fairly. Well, you know, time and time again, we see that not being the case. And we're not talking about, you know, the right loves to say, well, you know, if the union comes in, they'll demand, you know, that we pay you $1,000 an hour. That's never happened. It's the same argument that they use for minimum wage, of course. Well, let's just have $100 minimum wage. You're being ridiculous. And that's what they do. They throw out these ridiculous arguments so that we have an argument now to make, something ridiculous to talk about. But, you know, I look at this decision, and I go back to the Lochner era, which was the time where they used this one decision to say, you have no voice, nothing. It's amazing stuff to me. Anyway, there was a protest down the street from our studio here in Harrisburg this afternoon over the Marcellus Shale Advisory Commission's meeting. A bunch of people, Gene Stilp was out there doing his thing. In fact, called Lieutenant Governor Jim Cawley a prostitute. He also handed out, bills for delinquent taxes and environmental fines, which I always get a kick out of him. He's a great showman, I think. But look, there were about more than 100 people who came out with their signs saying no fracking, protect our environment, protect our water, make sure, you have some oversight. At the end of this, though, I don't know that, and they did disrupt the meeting, and they did, you know, kind of hold things down. They did definitely have their voice heard, but I don't think it matters. I think this governor has really come out, and he's hell-bent, man. He's going down the road. He's got his foot on the pedal, and you people be damned. Which is why I think we need more people coming out. We need more organization. I'm not at all minimizing what they did, because I think they did a fantastic job here. But what has to happen is we need to start putting pressure on people who are in positions of power to be able to help do some of this. State Representative Greg Vitale, who we've had on the program, he is looking at saying, look, we need to stop leasing the state forest land. We need to stop this handing out all of this land to these drillers. Recently, I guess, Scarnati has called for leasing an additional 50,000 acres. I mean, stop and think about how much. There's 725,000 acres available already for drilling. Do we really want 775,000 acres? I mean, and the more I look at this, the more I go, you know, one guy who was speaking, guy from came up from Texas. He was in the movie Gasland. He said, look, you've got gas wells. This isn't your grandfather's oil wells. These aren't your grandfather's gas wells. These are gas wells that are in people's backyards. These are in neighborhoods. These things explode, folks. These things can catch on fire. These things can destroy your water. And, you know, just when we had talked about that up in Bradford County, I think it was, the explosion that happened, the picture that they showed, there were houses all around that thing. And I'm going, how do you think that guy feels that his backyard is butted up against a gas well? And, you know, at the end of all of this, it's going to take a lot of effort, because this governor is bent on not allowing any regulation, not allowing any interference, as he sees it, into this industry exploding. And as I was listening to this guy from Texas talk, and I had a thought that I have not had in this whole debate, Jake, which is that this state, with this Marcellus Shale, is now going to change, the complexion of this state is going to change in such a way that we're going to be like West Virginia, where coal is king, natural gas is going to be king. And you're going to see, well, this guy was saying, you know, 500,000 wells should be the minimum here with the size of the Marcellus Shale.
That's a huge number with a dramatic impact on the quality of water, quality of the land. I think we better do this at a slow pace, and I'm afraid that this governor wants to go 100 miles an hour if he can.
And another guy,
it's very troubling.
This professor out from Pittsburgh, and we're going to get him on the program. He was saying, and I've made the mistake too. I've called it frack water. I've called it brine water. I've called it, you know, waste water. I've called it all that. It's not. And he's right. It's toxic fluid. That's what it is. There's very little water there. The fact that it's a liquid doesn't make it a water. And from now on, I've got to change my language, because it's not water anymore. It's a toxic solution. It's a toxic fluid. Because from what this guy was saying, and I'm looking forward to talking to him, they're going to take this stuff and put it into very separate areas, pump it deep into the ground. They're not even trying to really clean it. I mean, it's amazing to me. And we, walking down the path, allowing the governor and the Republicans to go, you know what? We don't need to oversee anything. We don't need it. We don't need it.
It is amazing. It is amazing. And by the way, that accident you talked about last week, I mean, all those chemicals went right into the Susquehanna River. Right into the river, and you know at some point, you know, some of that water is going to be used for drinking water.
Well, I really would like to find someone who lives near there so we can get a... just a jug, gallon of their water, put it right here on the set. Kind of like they did down in Louisiana when the oil spilled and they were getting oil being pumped through their wells and they were selling actual water out of their tap that looked like something that you could pump out of an oil well. We're going down a very dangerous path. Well, and what happened to the Republicans saying we want oversight and we want accountability? Where's that? These industries aren't going to be accountable for themselves.
And of course, his big excuse for not taxing them is, well, he wants these companies to bring their headquarters up here. Have you heard one inkling? Have you heard one company even talking about it? Nothing. Look, and you won't.
Look.
That's just a political cover.
Look, they're not going to move where they're destroying the environment.
Exactly.
Come on.
I know that. But yet, why aren't more people calling the governor on it?
Because they think it's going to be jobs. And like the one sign I saw said, you can't drink your job. If we destroy the water, we die.
You can have jobs and still treat Mother Nature and treat the citizens of Pennsylvania with respect. And what he's doing, he is just ignoring Mother Nature, and he's basically disrespecting the citizens of Pennsylvania in several key ways.
Governor Corporate, the conqueror, rape and pillage, rape and pillage. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. We'll be right back.
to The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The most important issues of the day. This is The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much.
So what's going on in the big town?
Well, I think the big thing, of course, is the birther issue. That has sort of been top of the hit parade. President making an announcement today. A lot of people still not believing that, in fact, it's real. Saying, with all the various CIA things they can make it up. I mean, you're never going to convince the nutcase.
Which is why I question why he even bothered. And I have to be honest, when I heard that he did put out the long form, I started looking around going, what's he covering up?
Well, actually, I think I have a very different viewpoint. And I actually wrote a piece on Fox News saying that he trumped Donald Trump because he took out was putting a tremendous amount of energy and money to this, and that was Donald Trump. I mean, he didn't put money specifically towards this, but by him talking about it pretty constantly, he was, and he's the one candidate who's even richer than Romney. And he was putting all this forth, and I think Obama just, their people were just waiting till he sort of went off on an edge on it and just say, hey, here's the certificate.
Now, if that were the case, and I'm not disagreeing with you, I think I would have waited a little further down the road until Trump got a little more steam and everybody else got kind of pushed.
Well, maybe, I think they want to show that these guys are really far out there, and then Trump wants to see his school record. Well, okay, how come we never saw George Bush's school record?
Well, what I want to see now are I want to see Trump's tax records. I want to see his tax filings.
Well, what's going to be very interesting is how big of trouble he almost got into with his bankruptcy stuff.
I want to see all of that stuff. If he's saying that the giant fishbowl is part of this, I want to see how he made billions, and I want to see the whole bankruptcy, all of that.
Well, as you know, what's good for the goose is not always good for the gander in politics.
Yep. You know who I feel sorry for, though? I feel sorry for this Jerome Corsi guy.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
I feel for him.
If you look at what's going on, World Net Daily is actually now putting out something saying that Corsi's book is going to actually show how the president really isn't qualified, and that Corsi is now claiming that he put this out to try and fight Corsi's book.
Again,
I mean, that is making up stuff as you go along.
Well, you got to give them credit. They're very good at marketing. Because, you know, when you title a book, Where's the Birth Certificate, and it comes out a month before your book comes out, kind of going to tank the book.
Somehow I don't think that that the reason Obama put this out was because of Corsi.
It has nothing to do with him. But, you know, hey, it's a good sales pitch. You got to give him credit for thinking on his feet.
You're absolutely right, Rick Smith.
And I do.
Okay, some other interesting things happening today, and that is the first time ever in the history of the Federal Reserve Federal Reserve Chair gave a press conference.
And how'd that go?
Well, he said that they are ending this this quantitative easing program, QE2 it's called, and the government is not going to need to purchase any more Treasury notes. He also said that the plan that they have had was successful. There is moderate growth expected between 3.1 to 3.4%. He said that they are going to keep interest rates quite low at the Fed, either split to zero or 0.25%. He said that unemployment will go down, but not by a lot, 8.4% to 8.7%. He said that there is slight inflation, and that a lot of is due to, of course, energy. And he also said the Fed can't do much about gas prices.
No, and basically he came out and said, if I get this right, that it's just supply and demand, and kind of it's just what it is. Get over it.
I think you're right.
When the reality is, I think everybody realizes that it's manipulation, it's the speculation that's going on. A lot of it has to do with that, in my opinion, and I think there's something to be looked in.
Well, it's interesting. The Republican line, Rick, is, of course, there's nothing wrong with essentially speculation, because that's the American way. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, nice. I guess Eric Cantor's going to be looking at some tax code stuff now?
He said he wants to revise the whole tax code. He wants to lower corporate taxes, but he wants to close loopholes. That's what his bandwagon that Eric Cantor was on today.
So basically we're going back to 1986. We're going to redo 86 all over again.
He's going to Reagan us.
Only at a lower starting point. So we're going to keep going lower and lower. Well, you got to give them credit. They do stick to a game plan, even when it fails time and time again.
Game and message. That's what they do.
And speaking of failure, Paul Ryan's bill coming up for a vote in the Senate?
Well, yeah. It looks like Harry Reid said he might put it up for a vote as early as Wednesday, and he is hoping that it does not get voted in. I don't think there's much chance it will, but one never knows.
No, I don't think so. And let me ask you last thing I've got for you before we go. What's your thought on the Supreme Court decision today? What's your take on
this? Well, it was a 5-4 decision. Obviously, the fives were the conservatives. And this was an interesting case. A couple had gotten a free cell phone from AT&T. They were charged taxes. They didn't believe they should be charged taxes on it because it's free. They wanted according to the contract that they had signed, it said that there would be arbitration. They wanted to do a class action suit, and then the lower court said, yes, they could do a class action suit, but it would still go to arbitration. And then the Fed said, no, state laws could be overruled by federal laws on this, and no class action for arbitration.
So what's your thought on it?
Well, I don't know. According to Jay Tamboli, this could have broader implications on class actions.
That's where I'm at.
Or it could not. Not sure. I mean, he's our Supreme Court reporter, and he wasn't really sure what the implications of the ruling were going to be in the long run.
All right. Ellen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And now to find out what's going on, what do you got for us tonight, Jay?
Yeah, Rick, an interesting poll from Quinnipiac has just come out regarding our esteemed governor. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett's budget proposals isn't going over well with voters, apparently, but a significant number remain undecided in Corbett's 100th day in office. The recently released poll this morning found that 37% of voters disapprove of Corbett's job as governor, compared with 11% disapproval in the group's February 16th survey. 39% of those surveyed approve of the job Corbett is doing. Corbett's unveiled his budget proposals March 6th, and the plan has drawn criticism since then, particularly for cuts for K-12 and higher education. The state has a $4 billion shortfall to cover. But Corbett is faring better other than other freshman Republican governors who ran on smaller budgets of cutting spending and not raising taxes, said Peter Brown, who's the assistant director of the Polling Institute. Brown said Florida Governor Rick Scott and Ohio Governor John Kasich both have disapproval ratings over 50%. This isn't great news for Corbett, but it could be worse. According to Brown, at this point, Pennsylvanians are roughly split down the middle about Mr. Corbett, with a big chunk of people who really don't have an opinion. Here's how voters are split on other budget-cutting ideas. Voters oppose state workers' layoffs, 50% to 43%. They oppose cutting state funding to public universities by 64 to 32%. Voters support privatizing state liquor stores, 64% to 28%. And they support taxing natural gas drilling, 69% to 22%. So some interesting numbers. He has taken some heat about the Marcellus Shale Advisory Board that he has set up. Some interesting information has come out today, Rick. Eight of the drilling companies with representatives on the Pennsylvania Governor's Marcellus Shale Advisory Board were cited with environmental violations last year. According to the analysis of violations from the Department of Environmental Protection conducted by Clean Water Action, an environmental group, the companies represented on the Governor's Commission accounted for 42% of all drilling violations last year. 514 out of a total of 1,227. With 174 violations, Chief Oil and Gas led the state last year. Chief Vice President of Governmental and Regulatory Affairs, Terry Bossert, sits on the commission. Attempts to contact Chef for comments Tuesday were unsuccessful. Chesapeake Energy has the third highest number of violations at 132. Chesapeake's Vice President of Governmental Relations, Dave Springmeier, was appointed to the commission but chose to step off prior to the beginning of its work. The commission's objective is to develop a comprehensive strategic proposal for the responsible environmental sound development of Marcellus Shale, according to spokesman Ray Walker of Range Resources. I can tell you this, after looking at some of these numbers, Rick, I'm not sure that the public can expect a fair shake from this commission. It's heavily weighted in the corporate interest, and I think long term, I think he's going to continue to take a lot of criticism. Some good news. I mean, we always talk about the division in this country right now, but there's some good news coming out of Pennsylvania. Apparently, our two esteemed senators have teamed up to fill some judge vacancies. The U.S. Middle District Court, which handles federal cases for the central part of Pennsylvania, is supposed to have six regular judges. It now only has three. With half of the judgeships vacant, the only salvation is that the eight senior judges who could be retired are staying on to help shoulder the caseload. The state's U.S. senators, Democrat Bob Casey and Republican Pat Toomey, announced a joint bid today to see those judicial vacancies filled. They haven't set a deadline for plugging the hole, said Larry Smarr, who's Casey's chief of staff, but Casey and Toomey are appointing judicial nomination advisory panels to recommend nominees for the eight judge vacancies in Pennsylvania's three federal court districts. Hamptonship lawyer Robert A. Gracie, a former state Superior Court judge, co-chairs the Middle District panel. It's going to be an interesting process, said Gracie, who heads the appellate group for the law firm of Eckert, Siemens, Charon, and Mollett. I'm sure that there will be a large number of applicants. The nominating groups will suggest candidates for the senators to present to President Barack Obama, whose nominees for the lifetime judgeships are subject to Senate confirmation. It's good to see this kind of cooperation between the two senators. That's going to benefit our state. And given the political climate, it's a real good change of pace, and it's good for the state of Pennsylvania. Right,
well, for now, we haven't seen what they've done, what they've come up with yet.
Well,
it's nice that they're looking at it and they're going to start doing something.
Those vacancies actually hurt.
Oh, they do.
Absolutely hurt.
You know, how would you like to be one of the people on the court with no help and a backlog? How would you like to be one of those people waiting for one of your court, your cases to be decided on, waiting and waiting and
waiting? Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's it's good to see that in a bipartisan way they're addressing that issue. And I had my doubts about Toomey, and I still do, but he did something good here. You got to give him credit where credit is due.
If you say so.
Okay.
All righty. Well, let's take a quick break. We're right back to wrap things up. We're back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Well, I know that somewhere down inside there's feeling small and scared. And they need to know that someone out there cares. Have you heard a Republican today? Have you tried to spread your love?
Yeah, that's what you should do. Big, big, sloppy, wet kiss to go along with it as well, right? Come on, big hug and a kiss. You think they'd go for it? Probably not. Anyway, today is the day. Today is the big day. The city of Altoona is no more. Nope, all gone. For the next month, evidently the next 60 days, the name of what was formerly known as Altoona, Pennsylvania, will now be Palm Wonderful Presents The Greatest Movie Ever Sold, PA. That's right. Morgan Spurlock, the documentarian, as they're calling him, has put up a couple of bucks, I guess 25 grand, to rename the city for 2 months. And, you know, hey, if you're going to be known for something, being desperate, I guess, is one of them. So very good for the folks at who live in Palm Wonderful Presents, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold, Pennsylvania. So good for them. Where I grew up, not much better, to be honest. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and here is another black eye from my hometown. UPI has reported that authorities in Cleveland said thieves. Yes, thieves. They used a hacksaw to steal a plaque honoring Superman creators Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster from a post in the Glenville section of Ohio. It's a little place off the east side of Cleveland. Evidently, they saw the saw the bronze the plaque off of the pole and stole it. That was reported today in the Plain Dealer. Now, again, you know, it's over on St. Clair Avenue on the east side of Cleveland, and I go, you know, why in God's name would you post something there like that? They did it back in 2003, so they should have known better. I'm surprised it didn't take longer to get ripped off. Here's one positive thing, though. The other black guy from my hometown was that they misspelled one of the guy's names. So now they'll have the opportunity to properly spell his name. Very, very nice. And also, you know, the kind of help, I guess, in my hometown. An artist in my hometown has spent more than 80 hours creating a portrait of the prince and soon-to-be princess Kate Middleton. Yes, he has. He has created this wonderful work of art on an etch-and-sketch. For those of you who don't know what an etch-and-sketch is, my kids love it. It's got two little knobs and a little thing that goes around. It's amazing. Spent 80 hours doing it, and I'm looking at it going, you do, George, his name is George Volsky, or Volsic, you need to get a life. Sorry. You just absolutely need some help. But he's hoping that someday to be able to hand it to the people in person. You know, the royal couple at some point, give them the etch-and-sketch, and I can just see it. I can see, you know, the princess looking at it, go, where's it made? Tipping it over. Oh. Come on, it's funny. Also today in Ohio, since I'm stuck in my home state, this morning a tractor trailer crashed on the Ohio Turnpike. Evidently the guy kind of fell asleep, and he spilled a tractor trailer load of cereal.
Ooh.
So if you'd brought your milk, you'd have had something. But a whole load of cereal closed down the road for more than 3 hours. And, you know, I go, what happens to the cereal now?
The birds eat it.
And for the people who steal gas out of my gas tank in my driveway.
Still.
Now, I'm still ticked off about that.
I know what I would do. That's just me.
Well, would you put sugar in the gas?
No.
Anyway, for the people who, you know, maybe I can give these thieves a little direction. The oil that they, like the restaurants have, the stuff that the grease that they leave on. Mm-hmm. There are other thieves who have been going around the country stealing the used fryer grease from restaurants all across the U.S. because evidently gas prices are going so high that they're willing to go and steal the the grease. In fact, Tom Cook, president of the National Renderers Association, said grease thieves have spiked whenever fuel prices climbed during the last 4 years, and this spring, he says, is no different. He goes on to say, it's on the rise, and it's because of higher oil prices. He says, I have one member who told me it's costing his business $1 million a year. I thought they threw that stuff out. I thought they actually had to pay to get that stuff taken away. Turns out it's a lucrative business. There is a lot of money in it. Anyway, tomorrow is Workers' Memorial Day. Hoping that folks will come out to the function here in the Harrisburg area. 8 a.m., they're going to hold a breakfast over at the Comfort Inn. It's the restaurant that's attached to it, the Passage of India. Starts at 8 a.m. The breakfast is from 8:30 to 9:30. Then at 9:30, they're going to leave, go over for the memorial service over at Laborers Grove, right there at Riverfront Park, a 300 block of South Front Street. And after that, a rally at the Capitol Rotunda, 11 a.m. You know, the whole idea here is to remember those who have died on the job, those who have been injured on the job. And, you know, I got to be honest, as one of the people who are going to speak, I haven't decided what I'm going to talk about yet, but I'm going to talk, I think, a little bit about my walk through the process. Because, you know, I've had an injury on the job that, you know, kind of changed my career. And it's something that it changes your life in really profound ways. And if you're not fortunate enough to have something to fall back on, I was fortunate enough to have this to fall back on. But if you're not, if that was your livelihood, where do you go from there? You know, I spent 21 years in the freight industry. When that was gone, where do you go? And what happens? And you look at the workers' comp system in this state, and there are a lot of problems here. It is a broken system. The compromise has been long broken. The fact of the matter is workers are getting the screw job in this state, no matter how you slice it. You know, when you go off, you get a couple of bucks. You get two-thirds of your wage. But you don't get health care. You don't get pensions. You don't get Social Security. You're basically screwed. And they hold on to you for a couple of years, and there are a whole bunch of tricks, a whole bunch of games. And the compromise, if you go back when workers' comp was passed, the big compromise was, I'm not going to sue my employer for the compromise that when, if and when something happens, that I'll be taken care of. Well, you know, over the years, what we've seen is we've seen that safety, that compromise, that safety in the knowledge of knowing that I'm going to be okay in the event something happens, we've seen that whittled away. And we've seen that being shifted, and we've seen who profits from the system. You know, the insurance companies make big profits. The lawyers make good money. The doctors make big money. But at the end of it, it's the worker who gets the screw job. They're the folks. And that's why tomorrow, I do believe, is important. That's why Workers' Memorial Day is important, to remember those people who came before us, the people who fought for just the little safety net that we do have. And that's why I think it's so important. So we hope you'll come out tomorrow, 8 a.m. for the breakfast. If you can't make it for that, 11 a.m. at the Capitol Rotunda for the big rally. You'll be there, right, Jake?
Absolutely.
One of the keynote speakers, correct?
I don't know about keynote, but I'll be one of the speakers.
Going to regale us with your oratorial skills, your oratory skills, right?
I will attempt to.
There you go. Hey, that's all you can do is attempt, right? But at the end of it, I'm hoping that everybody comes out, because this is an important date. It's an important time. Anyway, you know, all the stuff that we talked about today, if you missed any of it, and I think it's all important, it's vital, especially the employment stuff, especially that Supreme Court decision. Go back, download the podcast. It is there for your enjoyment, your entertainment, and most importantly, your convenience. You take it with you wherever you want. You never have to miss a moment of the program. And if you want to contact me, tell me, hey, you did all right here. You're an idiot. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. My favorites have always been, you're an idiot. In fact, you know, the first... when I started this almost 6 years ago, I had one guy, and I haven't heard from him in a while, but I had one guy who every show, because we were just doing the weekends for a while, every show he would send me this outline. And it was a much better outline than I did to actually do the show. And he would go through and he would refute every word I said. And at the end, he would write expletive, the big F-bomb, you're an expletive idiot. You're an F-bomb idiot. And for about 6 months, every week it kept coming. You're an F-bomb idiot. You're this. And then one week, it kind of turned. And he said, you know, I agree with you on this, but you're still an idiot. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy's coming to the
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.